across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Oh, for my generation, everyone remembers where they were when they heard that JFK had been shot. For the generation that follows me, curiously, and I put it to you, but I know I'm right, that everyone will remember where they were when they heard that Keith Chegwin was dead. Now, there's a lot of territory between the achievements of John F. Kennedy and Keith Chegwin. And yet, even myself, lying in the bath I was, listening, and I'll own up to being disloyal, listening to Smooth. I was listening to Smooth, and I admit it. Actually, because, you know, if you're in the bath, sometimes you just want something, you know, somnambulistic to listen to. So I was. And then, bang, there was a kind of a news flash. Don't get news flashes anymore. It's a shame. Because there was a news flash when JFK died. And then half an hour later, well, no, there was a news flash to say he'd been shot. And then there was a news flash half an hour later to say that he'd passed away. And then all the television stations shut down and there was nothing. No TV news, no radio. Just a blank screen. And they came back about an hour later. BBC did anyway, with an orchestra. It must have been a tape. An orchestra playing some somber symphony or other. But in the case of Keith Chegwin, I was quite taken aback. Were you? You must have been. There's something about Keith Chegwin that you think will go on forever. Or at least that you'll go before he does, somehow, even if you're 12. But partly because, although he was 60, and we were surprised to discover, weren't you, that he was 60, because 60 is very young to pass away from, you know, what used to be called natural causes. But there was something permanently 14-year-old about Keith Chegwin, wasn't there? He lived on it. It was his trademark, more than anything else. If you look at his press cuttings, it says that he is an actor, a comedian, and a TV presenter. Well, he did act a bit when he was young. He was actually in a Roman Polanski film. A Roman Polanski film of Macbeth. A film of a Shakespeare play. You know, no mucking about. Was he a comedian? At some point in this evening's show, we might explore the controversy about all the jokes that he came up with on Twitter, where he had 36,000 followers, not me. But there was a lot of controversy about the origin of those jokes and a lot of argument about whether it was acceptable for people to borrow other people's jokes, because a lot of comedians said that he was simply tweeting, he was simply tweeting funny remarks, funny lines, and saying that they were his own. There's something in here that I want to talk about, but not in relation to Keith Chegwin, and it has to do with how we regard and speak about and think about the dead. Those who have departed long ago, or those who, in the case of Keith Chegwin, have left us very recently. I do think that because of the outpouring of kind comments when someone passes away, someone in the public eye passes away, we always hear the best of them, and that's proper. We can think what we think. Sometimes we're ashamed of what we think. I often think that a lot of the outpouring of grief that happened when Princess Diana died was partly because a lot of the people who showed that grief were in regret that when she was alive, they had bad-mouthed her. And they regret doing that because her life ended so tragically and so young, and leaving those poor boys and so forth. We have to remember that everybody, you know, in the words of Jim Morrison, nobody gets out of this one alive. It's going to happen to all of us, and therefore it's going to happen to all the people that we know prior to it being our turn. So we should be careful what we think and say about people in case we find ourselves regretting it when it's their turn. So I'll be honest, and now my colours to the mast. I thought things and said things about Keith Chegwin, which now that he's dead, I regret. Slightly. In the shadow of the fact that he is no longer with us. But was I a great fan of his contribution to culture and entertainment at the time, prior to his death? No. Big time no, actually. Going to park it there for just a second. A reminder that you can join in the conversation. It's 0344 499 1000. What happens, by the way, I've been asked to remind you, you probably know already, is that I will call you back. Well, we will call you back if you call, so you won't be draining your contract or pay as you go, if that's how you're working it. And Kath joins this evening.
Hello.
Catherine Boyle is wearing a very fetching black evening gown, cut at the knee, sequined, strapless, her hair pulled back in a almost tourniquet-like...
I would say cocktail dress and chignon, but obviously I'm female.
And her blue eyes set off with some cobalt eye makeup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're looking great.
Thank you.
Is that for me?
Obviously. No, I went to the work Christmas party, which I was told to go to under duress, and actually it was very nice, and I wish I didn't have to come back to work. But obviously, you being here is a bonus.
Well, two things. First of all, tell us all about the party, and secondly, do you call this work?
Work in quote marks.
Okay.
The party was lovely, and it was one of those ones where I didn't want to go, but once I was there, I thought, I could get used to this.
What?
Well, Pixie Lott was singing, and she's rather good.
No, sorry.
Oh, you would like her.
Okay.
You would really like her.
Ian's going to be with us shortly.
Ian's going to be gutted. He likes her.
Sorry, breaking news, or indeed a newsflash. Ian Lee is going to be speaking on Talk Radio for the first time since he left, or nearly.
No, he spoke to Paul Ross this morning.
Oh, well.
But he'll be more candid with us, obviously.
Yeah, who doesn't speak to Paul? I mean, everybody speaks to Paul Ross. Princes, kings and thieves speak to Paul Ross. But the first time he's going to have an opportunity to break down his experiences will be on his own show.
Yeah.
Which I am looking after until he is back in the country. So the party. This was a Talk Radio party, or Talk Radio, Talk Sport, Talk Sport 2, Virgin party, or
all that,
or the
jazz,
whole of
and
the...
Signal and various other regional radio stations. They were all fantastic, by the way. And there was, do you know what? I thought it was a bit annoying. There was a little bit, there was some, there were awards given out. And the guy doing the awards, I love him to bits, but he was a bit of a div about the regional radio stations.
In what way?
Well, he was kind of disparaging about them in the way that only someone who's never worked on a regional radio station can be disparaging.
Who was this?
I can't remember. I don't remember.
Sort of MC character?
Yeah, and I don't want to name names. He was wrong anyway. As someone who worked for a regional radio station for 17 years, they're a brilliant breeding ground for talent, and he should not forget that.
I hate all that sort of thing. I'll just briefly tell you what happened. So they made me the Royal Variety Club of Great Britain. This was before the Sonys. So it was a long time ago. They made me the Royal Variety Club Commercial Radio Personality of the Year.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it was on BBC One, 8 o'clock in the evening. So it was a big deal. Sony's never got national TV like that. Anyway. So everyone was there, and the host was Terry Wogan. But the person who got to wind it up was Paul Daniels.
Right.
And he went through all the people, and they were huge. I mean, not me, obviously, but they were huge. And then he got around to me, and he just went, "And Tommy Boyd, from commercial radio, someone has to be." And, you know...
That's outrageous.
Yeah, and then I met him. Some years later, he came in to a radio... the old talk radio... And he was in the green room, and someone said, Paul Daniels is in the green room. And I wanted to go in and just push him up against the wall, little, under said run, and say to him, why do that? Why go for a really cheap joke at my expense?
This is the same guy who would be very disparaging about someone who went straight to the big time without doing the work in men's clubs, right? So why is it different in radio?
That's very well put. Very well put.
You've got to wear your spurs, I think.
I must say, I've been trying to make a judgment on this since you turned up. Because you sent me a very sort of slurred text.
Yes, I did.
It was a slurred text.
It was. It could have been slurreder.
Beer at Nines. So I text you back. See you at Nines. But you've just cleared up the quandary in my mind, because you couldn't possibly make a perceptive comment like that if you'd had anything to drink.
No.
So,
well, I had a little bit to drink, but not too much.
Did you? What's a little bit then?
Enough to be polite.
What does that mean?
You know.
I don't. Oh, enough to sort of be joining in.
Yeah, but not too much to be joining in.
Yeah, but you know what the Portuguese...
I wasn't doing wigwam bam.
What?
I wasn't doing wigwam bam or any of those kind of formation dances.
Was anybody doing wigwam bam?
I'm sure they will be soon, yeah.
OK, let's just go through who was there then and see how embarrassing was Paul Ross?
Paul Ross I didn't see, but no. Maybe he's going to turn up later. I imagine he's a later crowd type.
So he'll turn up in what is his territory, early morning?
Yeah.
OK.
Yeah,
what time's it going on until?
One.
OK. All right. Was Julia there?
I didn't see her, no. There was me... there was the... I went with the boss.
Okay.
Okay, because he kind of strong-armed me into going.
Okay.
Lauren, who runs the place, who is the boss's assistant. Okay. You know that thing of, do you want to speak to the man in charge or the woman who knows what's going on? She's the woman who knows what's going on.
I've never wanted to be the king or the boss of anything. I'm a great number two.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where the action is.
She's the woman.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
She knows. So I was hanging out with her.
You're going out on a limb here, saying these things.
I don't think I'd be surprising him at all by saying this.
I like it.
So I went and had a chat with Kate Lawler, who's been a brilliant supporter of Ian Lee and worked with him in the past on Rise or RAI colon SE that he worked on. It was the Big Breakfast replacement. And she is amazing, it turns out, and I love her. And that's not after having too many boozes.
No.
So, no, I had a really nice time. And I spoke to Dr. Pam Spurr as well.
Okay.
Not in a professional capacity, in a fun capacity.
But it's always awkward, isn't it, a works do? Isn't it always awkward, a works
do? Especially when you go in sober.
And unless you know that you've got a taxi lined up to take you home, it's a you know, free bar.
Yeah.
And they're going to play some good party sounds towards the end.
Normally I go in with Ian, who's my mate, and we can go and stand in the corner and laugh at everyone.
Okay.
But obviously he's let me down.
Yeah, do you think people, and what is it now, they're into a works do? It's the radio group's Christmas party do tonight. Where is it?
Mayfair.
Mayfair, okay. I said no, because...
There'll be ties round heads at this point.
There'll be ties round heads. Okay, as long as it ends there. right, and Ian, who is presumably... Sleeping off all his...
No, it's very early in the morning where Ian is.
Yeah, but sleeping off, you know, being in the jungle, sleeping on... What were they sleeping on? Camp beds with mattresses, or was it futons, or what?
Oh, no, it was camp beds. Like,
right. Ooh,
basically, 70s sun loungers.
Okay.
Those really hard ones.
You can't sleep on those, really, can you? And, what sort of mod cons did they have?
Ask him.
No, I'm asking you, just so I can get a picture out of how it is for him. Because my dad...
They had one chair between them.
Okay, see, my dad told me that when he did what he did by way of national service, and they all kind of slept on boards on a camp bed, bunk bed, for about 6 months, when he got home and there was his mattress, he couldn't sleep on it. And for the first few nights, he had to sleep on the floor because he couldn't handle all that luxury.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to find out, you know, what Ian's been missing. Did you ever see Castaway with Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Right at the very end, when he's been rescued and there's this big party in his honour, and he's simply standing at a window.
Yeah.
And he's got a lighter and he's just going click, 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 because it took him all those years to build a fire.
I can tell you something. When I did my Gold Duke of Edinburgh's award, I came back and really, really appreciated sitting on a chair.
Just sitting on a chair. Mm-hmm. How long were you away for?
A week.
Okay.
There's nothing like sitting on the floor for a week. Honestly,
no, true,
chairs
true.
Are amazing inventions.
Yes. Although I agree with Stephen Fry and the Tom Hanks character in Castaway, because Stephen Fry, when he did a 100 top gadgets, do you remember what his top gadget was? The cigarette lighter.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because it is actually quite phenomenal, isn't
yes,
it?
Because yeah.
fire is everything. Without fire, we would still be living in caves, I think. It was
yeah,
the
I never
one.
Mastered the rubbing of sticks.
You can't do it. I don't care what Ray Mears has to say. I'm not saying that he's fraudulent in any way. I'm sure Ray Mears genuinely can make a fire from nothing but what nature provides. But I've tried it. I tried it for years as a child because I had a magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those boys who did not incinerate ants.
Oh, you're good.
Yes.
Or bees?
No. No, no. Now, I can name names. It was John Darcy in my class.
Yeah, it was Darren Rodge in mine.
Who used to pull Daddy Long Legs apart?
Mm-hmm. Or no, he used to burn bees.
Why?
Because he could.
There's this autobiography, isn't there, of the guy who does Peep Show with David Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that when he was a boy, he remembers being different from the other boys because one day there was a bee that didn't seem to be able to take off in the playground. And he was really worried and protective about it. So he built some little stones around it to make sure that it would survive through to the next playtime. But when he got there, it was gone. And he always wondered whether it survived or died or anything. Well, I was that sort of boy, really. Looking after those who cannot look after themselves.
Apparently, if you feed them sugar water, they can revive.
Bees?
Yes.
Where did you learn that?
Probably one of my kids' television programmes.
Now, you see, we're back to children's television programmes, aren't we? Because
they're brilliant these days.
Are they better than they were?
I think they might be.
You see, we need the factual programmes. We need what, when I used to do a bit of it, we need what we used to call the window on the world. Because
yeah.
at the moment, the window on the world is YouTube, and children who know how to make use of that make better use of that than television. But those that don't go down the wrong path is how I see it.
My daughters are very into two programmes in particular, one called Operation Ouch, which is about biology. It's got two identical twin brothers. One is a doctor and one is a scientist, biological scientist. And they will get like a pig's bottom and show you exactly how the bowel works and stuff like that. So the girls are learning through that. And there's also an amazing program called Horrible Histories.
Yes.
Which I've learned a hell of a lot from.
Yes, he's a nice man who makes writes horrible histories. I've had some correspondence with him because his views on education and formal schooling are very similar to mine. But I watched one Horrible Histories and it'll haunt me for the rest of...
Which one was it?
...my days. I'm not going to say what I saw, actually, because it'll haunt you too.
I've probably seen it. I've watched them over and over again.
All right, well, persuade me during the commercial break. And if you can, I will say what I saw on a Horrible Histories that will haunt me for the rest of my days. It's Tommy Boyd in for Ian Lee, although the man will be along very shortly as soon as he wakes up in Australia or wherever he is. 10:20.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
I've made it my pledge to go to Ian Lee the moment he was with us, so I made a technical mistake and I didn't realise he's been waiting. Ian!
Hey, Tommy Boyd, how you doing, man?
Oh, it's irrelevant. How are you doing?
I'm, listen, I know it was only a TV show, and TV shows are what they are, but it was a very strange, immersive, it's been a month-long experience, including the 2 weeks I was in lockdown, and had my phone and computer confiscated. So I'm feeling very, very weird, you know, after being in an ever-diminishing group of people, some of whom I really liked and some of whom I didn't get on with so well, to suddenly be in what is considered to be a luxurious hotel, but actually it's quite garish and over the top. It's a very strange vibe.
Hmm. Yeah, I have to say, Ian Lee, on a personal note, you know, you and I have known each other in different ways for a long time, and I see you now slightly differently, but not enormously differently, because I always suspected that you are who you are, and yet it took a programme like that for it to be laid bare who you really are. And I want to say to you, and I think an awful lot of people in Britain now realise this, you're a bloody good bloke.
Thank you, man. That means a lot, you know, and here's the weird thing. We've been emailing each other and texting each other for years, and we only met once very, very briefly about 3 or 4 weeks ago when you were sitting in for me. But that means a lot. And
can you take it? You're going to get a lot of compliments like that. Are you any good at compliments?
Oh, I'm terrible. But do you know what I'm going to do? What I'm learning to do is I'm learning to go, thank you very much. That's very kind. I appreciate
it. Good. It was... It was a hell of a thing. What do you think you'll take away in a year's time will be your main flashbulb memories of a long period of time? They you know, we often sort of end up with two or three particular little zing moments.
Yep. There are some big obvious things for me. You know, I am terrified of heights, and one of the trials I had to do was walk along this balsa wood space station 100 feet in the air, collecting stars and all of this silly nonsense you have to do. And I had to jump from the edge of this balsa wood thing, jump forwards and up and grab a giant star. And I was absolutely petrified. But I did the Serenity Prayer before I did it, because that kind of calms me down. I thought of my children watching it and thinking they will think this looks cool and funny. And I did it, and it was flipping terrifying. And I thought, they told me, when I leapt for that star, that I would just hang there. So when I started falling, for a millisecond, I thought, this has gone horribly wrong, and this is going to be one of those terrible tragedies. Of course, they'd attached me to a bungee rope and hadn't bothered telling me. So there's that. And there was also a moment that they created a fictional pub in the jungle. And there was a moment when I was sat down at the table, and Stanley Johnson, who is, you know, a writer and an activist and, by coincidence, father of the foreign secretary. I think he's still the foreign secretary. I don't know. And he was singing We'll Meet Again by Vera Lynn. And I just thought, this is one of the oddest moments ever. This is such an odd experience to be in the middle of nowhere in the jungle watching this guy singing this. And one of my favorite moments, last one, was I haven't seen my sister Tommy for 2.5 years because she emigrated to New Zealand. And one day I was told to go down into the camp on my own where we collect wood from to do the fire. And as I walked down there, I had no idea what was going on. And the cameras everywhere filming everything. And I turned the corner, and there was my beautiful sister.
Wow.
And I hadn't seen her for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And it was such a thrill. You know, I was over the moon. It was so unexpected. I was at a very low ebb because it was near the end, and I was exhausted and filthy. And my beautiful sister was there. So that was a real treasure.
Now, so many questions. Can I start with a boring no?
You can ask me anything you want. You know that.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to bring in one of your favourite people, and everybody who listens to the show regularly knows the two of you almost like a broadcasting couple. Kath.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Alan Caddick.
Actually, he's on the other line. Do you want to speak to him instead?
Yeah, go on then.
No, really, Alan, stay where you are. Let's let Kath have a chat with Ian.
Wow. I don't know. We've already discussed the trauma of watching what happened from my perspective.
We spoke briefly on the phone yesterday. You were one of the first people I spoke to, and it was such a thrill. It's weird because I've obviously had my experience in there and all of the, you know, the emotions and all of that went with it. But the experience I'm finding for my friends and family is obviously completely different. And I didn't really think of the ripple effects. Now, there have been some negative things, like the press turning up at my mother-in-law's door for and asking her all kinds of personal questions.
Yeah.
But then there's been some positive things. And I know that you quite... You quite enjoyed it towards the end, didn't you, Kath?
I did. I really liked the fact that, you know, once the numbers got whittled down, I felt that you were more relaxed and you were able to be yourself. When you phoned me, I was with my kids and they were thrilled to bits to be able to talk to you about, you know, the rocket challenge where they saw you jumping for the star. And we also discussed the fact that you'd eaten some quite revolting things again, which delighted and appalled my kids in equal measure.
Yeah, the kids like eating the revolting things. My boys are thrilled that some parts of the animals' anatomies I ate. Here's the thing about the thing about the trials and the challenges. They're a huge part of the show, but when you're there, they're a really, really tiny part of the experience. You know, you may not do a trial or a challenge for 2, 3, 4 days, and when you do, it's 2 hours out of the camp, so it's something to do and it stops you going mad. But they're a tiny part. And all of the things... I was so looking forward to an eating challenge because I can eat anything. You know me, Kath. I will put anything in my mouth for a moment.
And I saw the face that you did on the last one where you said, right, I'm going to look at this and then I'm going to look away and then I'm going to eat it. I've seen that face a few times with you where we've been out on... especially when we went to Bratislava and we were dished up various things in Slovakia where we were told to basically try things and we were trying to be desperately polite and it looked awful. But I've seen that face before. But, I mean, you really went for it.
But the eating thing, honestly, I was hamming up the eating thing because it was quite easy.
Apart from the scorpions, that was actually horrible, wasn't it?
No, well, the scorpions, they didn't taste nice and I couldn't swallow it.
What do they taste of?
No, scorpions don't. They're very, very bitter. They had a kind of a sack inside them that when you crushed, this horrible bitter juice came out. The thing with the foods, Tommy, was it was primarily the texture that was the issue.
Did you have to eat any live animals?
No.
No, I was going to say.
They've stopped doing that, haven't they?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know. Cause I'm not an expert on the programme. I watched... I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, for the first time, largely in the company of Kath, in the studio, waiting to go on the air, covering for Ian Lee, whose show this is on Talk Radio, dear listener, especially for new listeners, for example, Becca, who said, listening to Talk Radio for the first time, because of Ian Lee, definitely going to be a regular listener from now on. Yeah. And I've also got a tweet, I don't know if it's genuine, it's from Toff, and it says, wait, is there a Talk Radio app? What's it called if there is? That may or may not be a genuine Toff.
It sounds a bit Toffish.
Sounds a bit Toffish, actually. So, obviously she's listening somehow or another. So just stay where you are, Toff. But thank you for that. So I wondered about the live animals thing. Then they change it. I was sitting.
There are live creatures there that get dropped on you, and you know, ethically, it's a bit iffy.
Do you know what I was really, really impressed by? And I think a lot of people were when you picked up the rat.
Isn't it funny? This is one of the things I noticed and I found fascinating. Everybody in there had different things, different phobias, and they were phobias that, you know, things that they were genuinely terrified of. For me, it was heights and spiders. And snakes and rats in that context do not bother me in the slightest. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to pick up the rats because I knew they'd all been bred for this purpose. They were pet shop rats, right?
And I used to have rats as a student. We had pet rats, so I wouldn't see them. Toff was losing her stuff over these rats that were, to me, looked quite sweet. And at one point, you reached over and picked one up and moved him very gently. And I think that's the first time I've ever seen someone, and I'm a Celebrity, treat a rat like a creature rather than an obstacle.
Mm. Yeah. Oh no, I like the rats. I like the snakes. And also, here's the thing: there's a very silly game where we had to put out me and Fizz from Coronation Street had to put our heads in 10 different boxes and using our tongues.
Oh God, that was
we had to unwind a coin that was stuck to something, and in each box there would be spiders, there would be snakes, and we had alligators in one. But here's the thing: the alligators had their mouths taped up, so there was no hint of danger at all.
Could we see that? Could we, the viewer, see that the alligators?
I doubt it. You could see it if you got closer.
See, I'm itching to talk to you about some of the subterfuge or theatre that goes on a show like that. But I'm sure you're contracted not to betray any of the truth of it all.
Tommy, you can ask me anything.
Right. So, first of all, you know, you and I have worked in telly. Everybody's watched telly, so I think we're all aware of the three camera shoot, with the centre camera being the wide, and then the two peripheral cameras being singles on, you know, blah, 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 blah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you were in group shots of half a dozen or more, and yet, as you bobbed around in the conversation and nobody knew who was going to say what next, everybody seemed to have a single. There seemed to be a two-shot on anybody who was standing next to each other who was going to have a little conversation with the person next to them. And obviously there's the classic wide, which is presumably static. Can you see all these cameras and are they manned or are they remote and camouflaged?
It depends. When you're out doing the live trials with Ant and Dec, it's like being in a huge television studio and there are about 40 or 50 people watching you. And I would say 8 or 9 cameras.
Yeah.
When you're doing the smaller challenges where Ant and Dec aren't there, it's a smaller crew. But there are probably 2 cameras and a crew of about 10.
Okay.
And occasionally they will get you to do something again.
Okay.
And when you're in the camp, we saw no one. Hardly anyone came into the camp. and there were cameras fixed on trees that could be operated remotely.
Okay.
There was a fake, opposite the camp, there was like a fake sort of rock face that had, I think, three giant cameras poking out, but you couldn't see the cameramen. And then, so when you were on the in the camp itself, there were probably, I think I counted about 20 cameras trained on you. Yep. Some of them operated by people holding them that you couldn't see, mm-hmm. and the rest were remotely operated.
And are they directing and cutting it live, or are the cameras slaved off to tapes and they do a quick cut later?
The cameras are moving around and you can see them switching from person to person.
They haven't got a red light on them.
No red light. There's no red light. You don't know you're being filmed. And then I spoke to some of the editors last night. So their job is then to get all of this raw footage and cut it into a slick-looking TV show.
Right. Talking to Ian Lee, whose show this is, I'm just Tommy Boyd looking after it until he gets back, which I'm told it might be next Monday, but we don't know. It's up to you, isn't it, really? Kathy's here. The two of them know each other inside out, but I've just stolen the thunder for a second because I've always been fascinated at how they make television programmes. And I hope you... listening as well. I'm fascinated by that side of it too. Do you hang your own microphones around your necks, or does somebody come mic you up in the morning?
You are microphoned 24 hours a day, and you wear it while you're asleep, and in the afternoon at 5 o'clock we will get sent off out of the camp to meet a very jolly man called Murray who would change your battery, and then someone would come and change your battery at 5 o'clock in the morning while you were asleep, but they always woke me up while they were doing it.
So you're even mic'd up when you're on the loo?
Yes, but... I would always put my hand very tightly over the microphone for some sense. There was no camera in the loo. That was the only place there wasn't a camera, but yes, you were mic'd up.
All right, sorry, quick, very short story. Who was the woman who sang There's No Business Like Showbiz? Ethel Merman. Great voice, did the Palladium. Went to the loo half-time during the show, and whoever was on sound forgot to take dip her mic. So what you heard was the clang of the door, the rustle of the underclothes... The rest of the noise, because it was number one and number two.
Oh, no.
But throughout it, she was still humming.
That's show business.
Probably not true. Kath, what else are you aching to ask him?
I'm aching to ask... Oh, gosh, we've had so many conversations already.
You guys can ask me anything. There is no contractual obligation. Okay. I can talk about anything.
Okay, here we go. All right. So I've been manning your Twitter feed, and I know that people have been really, really sympathetic as to what's been going on with you, what's been perceived to have been going on with you with the group dynamic and the guys, basically, guys and Rebecca Vardy. So what would you say to all those people who defended you in the belief that you were being bullied?
This is a tough thing. Okay, I wouldn't use the word bullied because bullied is a very, very strong word, and I wouldn't say bullied. I got on well, I thought, with everyone. I had a couple of run-ins with Dennis Wise, the footballer, and a couple of run-ins with Jamie, including a couple that I know weren't shown on TV, where he accused me of spying on him and all this kind of stuff. And I got on very well with Amir Khan, the boxer. And then yesterday, as you come out, they like to cause controversy. As I came out, they were filming me and showing me clips of the show that I wouldn't have seen. And it was those three gentlemen and Rebecca Vardy, all in various combinations, talking about me behind my back and accusing me of being a liar and being a fake and having a game plan, whatever that means. And Amir, who I considered to be a good friend, saying, telling lies about me and going along with their, rudeness and obnoxiousness about me. And they were saying I wasn't focused and there was a trial I couldn't do because I'm not a very strong swimmer. And they said it was because I was weak and I hadn't made an effort.
That trial was bloody awful. It was too small for you, that box. And I've seen your shoulders wedged into it. I mean, for heaven's sakes.
And I can't. It was 3 meters down, and it was almost exactly 3 meters down. I can't swim underwater. You know, that's my thing. And seeing that, and particularly Amir, seeing that upset me a lot, and made me think, okay, perhaps I wasn't as close to Amir as I thought I was. And there was a lot more going on than perhaps I thought. I wouldn't say I was being bullied, but there was certainly, I would say, some hostility towards me and some, people saying I was isolating through my own volition. There was certainly pressure put on me to exclude myself from the group slightly.
What time is it where you are?
It is. I don't know. I'm looking. Let me look at the watch.
But it's early
20
morning.
To 9. Is 20 it? To 9 in the morning. Yeah.
What have you got to do next after us?
I am going for, we're all going for a big breakfast at 9:30, and it's going to be all of the friends and family, as well as, you know, everyone that's in the show. And then this afternoon at 2:30, I'm flying to New Zealand to surprise my niece and nephew, who I've not seen for 2.5 years, so I'm going to rock up at their house.
So what I'm asking is, can we have you for a little bit longer? Are we going to pay the rent
in a minute,
that? Good.
Yeah, definitely, of course.
Okay, this is the Ian Lee Show on Talk Radio. Tommy Boy's looking after things until he gets back from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Kath, his sort of broadcast other half, is here. If you would like to ask Ian any questions or talk to Ian about his experience, it's 03444991000. I'll do that again slowly in just a second. If you've just arrived at Talk Radio because of watching Ian in the jungle, remember, it might be your mobile, but if you get through to the switchboard and we want you, we will call you back and pay for it. So that number is 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
It's the Ian Lee Show. Ian is in Australia, just sort of getting his breath and warming down after I'm a Celebrity. And one of the listeners who's been keeping us in touch with all the minutia whilst he's out there, Alan.
Can you
Caddick,
guess which one? Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Is champing at the bit. Alan?
Yes.
Alan, you're on.
Hip in, hip, boss.
Hey, Alan, how's it going, man? I've missed you, buddy.
No, man, congratulations on game, man. You did Talk Radio really proud.
Thank you. Here's the thing. There's a few reasons why I did the show. The first one is, let's be honest, they wave you a very, very generous check in your face, okay? So that was kind of a key factor, and let's not be shy about that. But it was the fourth or fifth time they've asked me to do it, and I've always said no. And one of the key things was, I am so proud of the radio show that Kath and I do. And, you know, as a fanboy, it's lovely, incredible to have Tommy sitting in. But I'm so proud of the show that I wanted to take it to a bigger audience. You know, we get about, I think, 60, 50,000 listeners, something like that. And I think it deserves a lot more. So I thought going on a huge mainstream entertainment show would hopefully attract some more listeners. And the other two reasons, very quickly, were my boys weren't born when I was on TV. You know, they've never seen me on TV, really. So I wanted to show them the silly, ridiculous job that Daddy has. And also my mum, who's, you know, is not very well and has had a bit of a rough time, and I knew that she would have a real giggle seeing me on there. So those were the driving factors behind it. But yeah, I'm glad, and hopefully we'll get some new listeners and some new callers, Alan.
Well, my family's been voting for you. I mean, my mum never seen what you looked like before we went in the jungle.
And what did you think?
She was impressed.
Ooh, lovely.
You're in.
Has been voting for you every night.
Well, that's very kind, Alan. I really appreciate the support on coming out. Because obviously, when we're in there, we don't have computers, we don't have phones, we don't even have watches. It's very, very weird mind games where you're not allowed to know the time. Coming out and seeing the support from all different kinds of people and hearing that from your mum, that's really lovely, Alan. Thank you.
Gary calls from Catford, wants to talk to you, Ian.
Hi, boss. How's it going?
I love that brief dealing with Caddick. That was great. That was
he's a master.
Professionally done. Hey, Caddick, Gatford, how are you doing, man?
I'm very well, thank you. I wonder if you could answer a question for me.
Yes.
Can you lend me about £4,000? I seem to have run up a bit of a phone bill.
I can lend it to you very, very easily now.
Yeah.
Yes, I can.
I voted for you to do every task.
Oh, you absolute... Thanks. Thanks.
No, that's fine. No, because the number of times you've cut me off, I thought you deserved to eat, drink and wallow in bugs.
I enjoyed the trials because it's so boring in there. You're not even allowed a pen or paper, so you are sat with your thoughts, which in some ways is very freeing, but it can also be, you know, can be quite dull. So going out and I wanted to go out there and do things and confront, you know, fears and find out what I was scared of, find out what I could do. So whenever I got called for a trial, it was always a gas to go out and do it.
That pig's privates, though. I mean, I'm never going to let you forget that.
Well, yes, pig's nunu. I'm the first person on British television ever to eat a pig's nunu. How's about that? That's something for the Wikipedia page, isn't it?
Alex is next. I think Alex is a first-time caller or first-time listener or some such. Hello, Alex. You're through to Ian.
I'm not first time. In fact, just talking about Pig's Nunu, I think what we spoke about last time in was a flangita.
It might well have been, yes. I remember that call. I treasure it every day.
Yeah.
What you got for us, Alex?
You're good. I was just wondering, how are you feeling now? And when are you coming back? Because all of your listeners who love you are wondering that. We're wondering when you're going to be back, just doing your normal show, trying to be just yourself again.
Okay, I will tell you. I'm definitely back next week. Definitely back from Monday. Possibly, I don't know what Tommy's been told, so I don't know if Tommy's been told the whole week. I might be doing a show or two this week. I don't know. It's going to be tricky because I'm going to be in New Zealand in a place where I need the internet to do the show, and I don't know what the internet's going to be like. And I know that I will be travelling back home when I would be doing Friday show. So I can't do Friday. I get back in the UK on Sunday morning and I should be back on Monday. And I'm doing shows all over Christmas. I've got Christmas Day and Boxing Day off. But apart from that, I'm in. I'm back and I'm raring to go. Because that, you know, the radio is, as Tommy will tell you, that's not a job. That's just the funnest thing you can do, sitting in front of a microphone, talking to your mates and allowing thoughts to drop out of your mouth. It's a joy. So hopefully. And as for how I'm feeling, physically I'm really tired because I didn't sleep very well last night. My head is racing. Coming out from that bubble into a world of lights and photography and people shouting at you and stuff, it's a lot to process, you know. So I'm kind of trying to enjoy the experience.
You can tweet us at Talk Radio. Donna's tweeted, how much weight did you lose in all, Ian?
The medic there, Bob, said that I'd lost about a stone and a half. I don't believe that. I did lose a lot of weight, but I've not got scales here, so I don't quite know. I would say about a stone.
Kay's next, calling from London. Kay, you're through. Ian's listening.
Hello. Hi,
hey,
Ian.
Kay, how you doing?
I'm all right. Oh, you did so well. I'm proud of you.
Thank you
sounds
much.
Patronizing, doesn't it? I don't mean it like that, but
no,
you
it doesn't.
Great,
it sounds very lovely.
Oh, and you know what was nice was seeing someone who is intelligent and witty and sharp being in one of these shows. No disrespect to anyone else, but, you know, it just makes it more interesting seeing someone like you on there, I think.
Well, thank you. Here's the thing. I just went in and was myself. The first couple of days, I was a heightened version of myself because I was just...
Yeah.
I'd had almost 2 weeks in a hotel, unable to leave. I had a chaperone with me. And I didn't have a phone or a computer or any internet, so I was just kind of there going mad. The first couple of days, I was so nervous and so overwhelmed. It was such a surreal experience. Here's the thing you don't see, right? When to get from the trials and the challenges, you sometimes would have to be driven there, okay? And they don't want you to know where you are. So you would be driven around in blacked-out vehicles. You'd come out of the jungle, climb into a blacked-out vehicle, get driven somewhere, and then when you came out of the vehicle to go to the trial, they would put towels over your head. It was like Guantanamo. They would put towels over your head.
Well,
and you would
they weren't attaching electrodes or...
Well, they did on one of the trials, actually. I did get electrodes.
They did.
We know what you mean.
But they would put a towel over your head and you had to have your head down so you could see your feet. You would put your right hand out in front of you and put it on the shoulder of the person in front of you and you would be led to the trial and you couldn't see anything. It was the weirdest, the most confusing thing. And you weren't allowed to know the time, and I don't know why, but every time we went out, the film crew would have bits of black tape over their watches so you couldn't see the time. And if you, they weren't allowed to talk to you either, so you'd ask them, what time is it? They'd just look at you.
Ian Lee
is
a guest.
Outside?
Ian Lee is a guest on Ian Lee's show. The queue's going around the block, Ian, which is why I'm just sort of rattling through everything, if that's with you. But you being a guest on your own show reminds me, did you ever see that Danny Baker late attempt at a late night sort of Saturday Night Live show? Danny Baker,
I was on it once.
Really? And I'm sure
yeah,
you were good.
I was on it as an audience member playing the drums.
Well, yeah, blagging.
No, it's just, I remember a joke that only Danny Baker could do and only people of a certain ilk could get. And that was that at one point he told a joke sitting behind his desk with the microphone in front of him. And they cut to the audience reaction. And in the middle of the audience, just noticeable, laughing at the joke, was Danny Baker himself. And that's absolutely, isn't that Danny Baker? Anyway, Ian Lee is brilliant. The main guest on the Ian Lee Show tonight. Hannah Russell has some tweets very quickly. What did Ian say to Dennis Wise when they met? I'll read you the tweets and you can answer whatever you like. All right.
Yeah,
what fish says, what did Ian say to Dennis Wise when they met outside? Ian has said, can you ask Ian if it has much fun mucking about with Ant and Deccan? It looks. Hannah says, could you ask Ian what kind of cake will he get from Nadia? What did Ian do whilst in hiding pre-jungle gaming TV patients? That's Pablo Bonzo.
I've read lots of books and listened to a lot of audiobooks.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Rebecca says, is there anything you wish you'd done differently and what am I supposed to watch now?
Let me answer those questions. What did I say to Dennis Wise when I came out? It sounds like the start to a very bad joke, which perhaps it was. I shook his hand and said, I have no beef with you. When I was in lockdown, I just read and watched some terrible, terrible movies on the hotel TV and meditated. Was there anything I wish I'd done differently? No, I did it. I did it as me. That was me. That was me, you know, and Kath will know that was me 100%. And that's the only way I could play it. And I'm really glad I ate those strawberries. I thought it was funny.
To Dom in Manchester. Dom, you're on.
Evening, chaps. You all right? Evening, boss.
Hello, Dom. Yeah, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. It's really good to see you. I was going to ask you about Twitter and just how many notifications did you have on your phone? How many, when your phone got turned on?
I didn't have any notifications because I'm not dumb. I turned off Twitter notifications a long time ago, but I've got over 30,000 new followers on Twitter. It's taken me 10 years to get 50,000, and then in the space of 3 weeks, I've got another 30,000. And I couldn't read all of the tweets. I've kind of glimpsed at them and skimmed them, but I've not read all of them because there were just so many.
They were fantastic, weren't they? And who's... Of the people that have started following you and the people that have commented and give you the support, who's like really taking you aback and you thought, oh my God, they're aware of me, that person?
Gordon the Gopher.
Nicky Dolan's, obviously, you know.
Gordon the Gopher is the big one. Who'd have thought Gordon the Gopher would be tweeting me? It's a dream come true, Tommy, it really is.
Jamie's tweet, in the 2 weeks doing nothing, did you write any of the book?
No, because they took my computer away, and I know pens and papers, but it gives you hand cramp.
Nat Kimber tweets, could you ask Ian, would he ever do it again? Did you enjoy your strawberries? Why did you confess to it?
The reason I confessed is because I'd done a bad thing, and I feel you have to be honest for your reactions. The main reason I confessed is, and Tommy, you'll get this, I knew that it would be bloody excellent television. Okay. That the strawberry thing for me was right. Mike Kaufman. I knew it would be great TV.
Right, okay.
See, now that's the moment that Dennis Wise thought you were playing a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched it. Yeah. I watched most of what I watched sitting next to Kath, who didn't take her eye off the screen. And I was having conversations with her while she was watching you. And because she knows you well, I was able to say to her, is he being Ian Lee at the moment? And she was saying, yep, Ian Lee. That's Ian Lee. Oh, now he's broadcasting.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Well done, Kath.
Are you still continuing to diet? Asks Carol on Twitter.
Yes, I want to keep this weight off, but let's see what happens. I had a big burger and I had a $40 burger in this ridiculous hotel last night. So let's see.
We got. I'll take one more tweet and one more call, and then we'll take the news and maybe Ian. Then you've got to go to breakfast. So
I've got to go and have a shower and get breakfasted. Yes,
I like this tweet from Alford. Was there any sexual tension on the show?
I didn't notice any. Certainly not between me and anyone. I don't know if there was between anyone else.
And to Barry in Western Supermare.
There's a bit between Amir and Jamie Lomas, wasn't there?
I think there may have been.
There's a lot of measuring going on.
Yeah, everyone had their willies out and was measuring them and waving them around. Metaphorically speaking, yes.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yes.
Barry in Western Supermare, you're through to Ian.
Hello, Ian, mate. It's nice to see you back.
Thank you, Barry.
Can I just say, Ian, thanks to Tommy, Rufus and Jamie, who have held the fort and done a sterling job for you while you've been away.
All excellent men, but don't forget, they are being paid for it.
Yeah. And can I just say, real ambassador, a real professional, Ian.
Barry,
It's fine, carry on.
Are you quarrat there, Barry? Quarrat?
I beg your pardon, Ian?
No, I'm Tommy, but you're flattering me.
Oh, right, yes. Well, Tommy, is just to say that Ian has been a real ambassador. I think he's really promoted the show. And can I just say to say to Ian that Kathleen has been a real pillar of support for you, Ian.
There we are.
There we go. We love Kath.
Thank you very much indeed, Barry. Nice one. This one intrigues me. A tweet, Ian, from Leslie White. Yeah. Does Ian neatly know that he missed a fab tweet from Bob Mortimer?
I saw a couple of tweets from Bob Mortimer. I don't know if those are the ones she's referring to, but yes, I'm a huge fan of Vic and Bob, so it was incredible that I saw Bob had been tweeting his support. I was thrilled by that.
He said something like, "Get in, you beautiful bar steward."
Oh, yes, I did see that one.
And also, in unrelated news, you got something from Sports Video Keith.
Oh, really? I'll have to check that one out.
He's
missed that one.
He's also in your corner.
Oh, good for him. Well done. Well done.
Ian Lee's about to go to breakfast.
Yes.
He's come out of the celebrity jungle smelling of roses, and he's going to be back with you very soon. It might be Monday next week in person, that's to say live in the studio, or it might be using technology sometime before then, so watch this space. One last quick tweet from Alexander K. Williams.
Yeah.
Ian, it says this, Ian came across really well. I hear the prize money is going to help his mum out. Top fella.
Thank you to the first bit. The second bit's not true. I don't know what that story came from, but she'll get a box of chocolates out of it at least.
Okay, and there's all of that to talk about the press coverage when you're back in the hot seat, Ian.
Tommy, listen, you know, I couldn't have a nicer and better broadcaster sitting in my chair keeping it warm. So thank you, mate, and thanks for letting me come on. I know it's a weird old thing, me being on my own show, but I really appreciate it. Thank you, man.
It was surreal. And back at you, all of what you said.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Bye, Kath. See you later.
Bye.
Ian Lee, obviously. Back announcing, really, do you? Right, OK, well, it's a shame. We could have done that all evening long, I think, because the phone lines were red hot. 03444991000. And if you call that number, and I'll do it again in just a second, we will call you back. You can text the word talk and then your message on 87222. Or you can tweet us. It's very simply at Talk Radio. And that number again is 03444991000, and we will call you back. It's Tommy Boyd in for Ian Lee. Kath is here. If you call, it's Karen you'll speak to. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
As it's cold out there, I found myself noticing what we're all wearing. And I find that the Brits, all of us look like fashion icons in the cold weather. It's during the spring and the autumn that we begin to go a little bit at the edges. And in the summer, we're a mess. But in the winter, when we're dressed up in our woolies against the cold, we all look rather stylish. Catwalk almost, except for a man I saw today who was just about to get on his bike, and he was wearing one of those cycle helmets, and they all look a bit silly. I'm sure they do a good job, but they do all look a bit silly. But, you know, they sort of got ventilation in them. Why is that? I suppose it's something to do with the structural strength or something, but you know what I'm talking about. Cycle helmets all look slightly space-aged, and they have the sort of car radiator vents, big ones in the side of them. And his was red and white, but the thing was, he was wearing his cycle helmet on top of a massive, massive woolly hat. Not a sort of Rastafarian-sized woolly hat, but halfway there. And his total headgear was getting on for 18 inches high, and he looked like an unofficial bishop about to get on his bike. Woolen hats generally are a bit of a fashion no-no, but like I say, during the winter, well, we don't look too bad in our heavy coats and our flying jackets and those long overcoats that go right down. You know, we look pretty good in our winter clothes, don't you think, Kath?
My kids have got a...
Welcome back.
There's the microphone. My kids have got pretty terrific woolen hats at the moment. They've got pixie ears sewn onto the side of them, so they look like little elves.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really
well,
cool.
Well, actually not cool, but
well, when you're
childlike.
When you're five.
Okay, well, that's
it's very cool.
Totally different.
Yeah, very cool. So, no, they look great. And we went out in the snow and they wore their woolly hats and I had mine on. And actually, there comes a point where it's all about function over fashion, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was arguing with somebody many years ago who said that if something works, as far as he's concerned, it's beautiful.
Mm.
And he even thought that electricity pylons were beautiful because they did their job.
Well, I can see that because if you like the Eiffel Tower and if you like the
That's
Blackpool
a good point,
Tower,
isn't it?
They are very utilitarian, aren't they?
Yes, we had we looked after a 6-year-old belonging to somebody else at the weekend. And his degree of sophistication on his iPad was astonishing. And I was looking over his shoulder because it was all so fascinating. And he was looking at a YouTube presentation about the world's tallest buildings. And I didn't know that at one point, for a long time, the Eiffel Tower was actually the tallest building in the world. And then the Chrysler Building came along and was the tallest building in the world for about 20 minutes until they finished the Empire State.
Yes, but then didn't the, there wasn't, was it the Chrysler Building or the Empire State? I think it was the Chrysler Building where it wasn't and then they raised an antenna.
They put something up to
get
there.
So it looked like it wasn't and then...
And speaking of which, have you seen that there's a new tallest British mountain?
No.
Yes, sorry, Bob.
How does that happen?
I'll tell you all about it after we've had... a quick rundown on what we're talking about on the show, now that we have sadly let Ian Lee go off to have his breakfast. Could I talk to him until 1 o'clock? We're talking a little bit about cold weather fashion. We're also talking about this, Kath, and you, gentle listener, because I don't know what I think. I walked across the city at 2 o'clock in the morning last Friday, Saturday morning it would have been, and passed an awful lot of shop doorways in which people were asleep.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They were all asleep. Now, everybody else was not only awake, but was going to have trouble going to sleep when they got to their beds, even if they'd had a few, and some people had had a few. Everyone was very happy. We know that insomnia is a big problem for a lot of people. Going to sleep is very difficult for a lot of people. But people who are homeless, who largely have nothing pricking their conscience, it seems to me, all fall asleep reasonably easily. Now, I talked about this with a few people today before I threw it out as something to think about or talk about on the radio. And people said, well, you know, the cold, obviously. And then they said, well, maybe they've had a tin of something. But I can honestly say you don't see empty beer cans around the sleeping bags of people who are homeless. You tend to see mineral water, fruit, you know?
Here's another thought. Having spent the whole day outdoors, walking around to keep warm, I think that probably, you know, the whole thing of having fresh air and having exerted yourself all day. I drive past a particularly large, old-fashioned church, and there are always people asleep in the doorways. And in the summer, you think, well, okay, well, that's, obviously that's out of the maybe the wind or the breeze. But this time of year, I always do think, you know, I think of them as I drive by, thinking, gosh, I hope they're all right.
Yeah.
People die in places like that, don't they?
Well, our car doesn't work at the moment, so I was faced this evening with the prospect of spending more money than is sensible to stay in a hotel or see if I could find a friend to crash or try sleeping rough. And this is the second time when I've given probably not enough serious thought to it, but I did give some thought to it just to see what the experience is like. So I had a day selling Big Issue and it wasn't a happy experience for me, but at least I've experienced it. And I just wondered about sleeping in the great outdoors.
Mm.
Obviously, I'd need to kit myself with the right sort of sleeping bag or something.
It's too cold to do it on a whim today.
I don't know. It's there to be done so that you understand. The number is 0344 499 1000 0344 499 1000 Alistair says, can only wear big woolly hats. They're the only ones that fit my enormous head. Julian is on the line from Reading. Julian, good evening. Okay, we'll go to Julian in just a second. One of the other things I wanted to briefly talk about, Kath, is this. You know Brexit?
Yeah.
I was Remain, but now I'm unsure of myself. But I've got a strange thing going on, which is that when I was a boy, English and Scottish teams used to play in the European Cup. And even if I hated the team, Leeds, I wanted them to beat the Europeans.
Right, I get you.
And now, although I find myself still having to argue that Brexit is not necessarily going to be a good idea, I'm cheering on David Davis and Theresa May because I want her to beat the Europeans.
Okay.
Can you get that?
I kind of do. I'm in a weird position because I am the beneficiary of the European Union. I was a languages student, and so for a year, my fees were paid by the European Union. I was an Erasmus student.
Yeah.
So I did 6 months in Paris and 6 months in Zaragoza in Spain. And so I find it very difficult to argue against a system that gave me a hand up, really.
You don't feel any kind of them and us?
No. I don't. My best friend is Spanish, and she's someone that I never would have met without that system. Mm. And I kind of see her as, even before we understood each other's languages, this is a weird thing. I went over there at the age of 14, failing my GCSEs, and my dad said to me, okay, well, listen, if you do this exchange system and you don't get along and you don't learn Spanish, then you can knock it on the head because you're giving it a go.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, you know, drop her in at the deep end and see if she floats. Mm. And I went to this village in the middle of Andalusia where people don't generally have a massive, massively huge level of English to speak. So I was put in this village with a girl who was a bit older than me and who was also flunking English. And we just got on. It's a weird thing that from the moment we met, there was something in her and something in me, and we wanted to talk to each other, and we just got along, and we started through sign language, and we ended up, you know, doing things that 14 and 15 year old girls do and learning that way. So rather than sitting in a classroom.
Sorry, that's so distracting when you say that.
What I mean is,
I think I know what you mean, but
what I mean is talking about
down, that would definitely not stand up in court.
What I mean is talking about Whitney Houston being number one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or okay, going to the fine. Disco and talking about boys.
Understood.
Rather than sitting in a classroom and saying, could you please fill my engine? I didn't have a car. I was about 5 years off having a car, but that was the syllabus at the time.
Okay,
the GCC.
I've got that camaraderie, but you don't, there's no part of you that feels as though you want to get back at Sepp Blatter and Turkish referees. Chelsea fans will know what I'm talking about.
No,
or Eurovision.
I think Sepp Blatter,
they vote against us at Eurovision out of prejudice.
Sepp Blatter's probably a knobhead. And the Eurovision thing is ridiculous. But I think for the most part,
all
the same, aren't we?
Yes, but would you rather we rolled over the Europeans or the Europeans rolled over us?
I don't know what you mean by the Europeans.
The EU. Who are you with? Are you? Because if you're not with us, you're with you know Juncker and.
Well, that's it. When you talk about the EU, you're talking about the Eurocrats.
Yes. Representing.
Yeah.
Europe, actually.
Yeah.
Who do you want to win? Davis and May or Juncker and.
I kind of like the way things were, if I'm going to be absolutely honest.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to wear a rosette at some point in the next 12 months.
I don't believe that... all right, I'm going to say it. I don't believe that Theresa May and the other fella have got a plan.
Fair enough. What's the number? It's 03444991000. Julian is next in Reading. Hello, Julian.
You love Timmy Mellett. Did you hear him on the news?
I did notice that he was on the news, dressed as he... Oh, does he still dress like that?
I don't know. He was talking about the late Keith Chegwin.
Yeah, I can imagine.
How very sad. Very sad. I'm not in Reading, by the way. I'm in Ireland visiting an auntie who's not well. And, well,
what part of Ireland?
That's life. I'm in the north, in Antrim, the northeastern coast.
Great part of the world. But I'm sorry about the reason you're there.
No, well, it's part of life. Death is part of life, and it gets you thinking, doesn't it?
It does.
And what
it
you
should.
Said about Keith Chegwin, it struck a chord with me. You think he was going to? He was very youthful.
Mm.
Very.
Where were you when you heard that Keith Chegwin had died?
I was on my way up here from Cork. I flew into Cork to see a friend in Cork, and now I've travelled up north to see my auntie. So. Two birds with one stone, and just as probably as I crossed the border, which is open at the moment, I heard that Keith Chegwin had passed away.
How was it on the news?
Yeah, radio
or news flash.
No, just the hour news,
because it was a top story in on many radio stations.
Yeah, it should be.
Should it?
Cheggers. Well, I think, should it? I don't know. But he was a likeable guy. But is that because I sensed in your little introduction, had you said bad things about him?
No.
In the past?
No.
If this,
but if, I didn't have, I'm afraid, I did not have the unbridled enthusiasm for his contribution to our nation and its culture that is being expressed at the moment. And more than that, I won't say. It's standard practice when somebody passes away to say how wonderful they were. I'd rather we said to people before they died, if we get what we need to do is celebrities need to give us notice if they can that they've got 72 hours or so. And then, you know, I'm not joking. And then we could say these things. Jimmy Mallett then could say to Keith, you know, you'll be sadly missed. Yeah. And he will appreciate that.
Well, Bernard Manning did his funeral, I think, while he was still alive and well, didn't he?
Do you know that you can go, can't you, to pre-funeral wakes at which the soon-to-be deceased is present in America?
Only in America? Why not? But Tommy, I know you know the answer. That's why I phoned you.
To what?
What actually happens? What does happen when you die? Do you experience anything, or do you just no longer experience anything at all?
I've decided that I'll never know, and I'm not clever enough to know, which is why I'm not religious, because religious people seem to me to think that they know, and you can't, so I don't know. I hope that it all becomes clear, or that there's nothing, because if there's nothing, it won't matter. I wasn't alive at the time of Henry VIII, and I don't regret that, and I think death will probably be the same. My view of the future will be as painless as my view of Henry VIII. Because I won't be there.
Just go back to being
nothing.
What it was like before you were created.
Yes, that's
like
what I
suspect. You have not existed before,
but
so
I
why not?
I am fascinated by the idea that if the universe begins to come back into itself, you know, if it's kind of like an exhalation and then an inhalation, and then at some point the universe reaches the zenith of its exhalation, and then it starts to go backwards into itself again.
No, right. Come on, you got that from Stephen Hawking.
Correct. I'm not claiming it's my theory.
Okay.
But what's fascinating is that we will live our lives over again backwards.
We
have had it many times.
Oh, God.
This isn't the first time that we've had this conversation. And the next time we have it, it'll be... we'll all sound Russian. And it will begin with me saying, thank you for your call.
Yeah.
And it'll end with me saying, hello, Julian, in Reading.
In Reading.
But worst of all, is the whole notion of birth and death. If we live our lives in reverse...
Yeah.
What a way to die. Returning into your mother's womb. Oh.
That was a cesarean baby.
Well, they'll have to open her up and put you back.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Well, is that any more ridiculous than what a birth is?
I don't know.
Look at eating and passing...
There's an episode of Red Dwarf where they show up in a universe where it is like that, and they're seen as freaks because they do everything how we do it.
Yes. Is there a play by Sartre in which the opposite is true? Instead of revering food and being very embarrassed about defecating, it's the reverse. And so some people go round for not a dinner party, but a pooing party. And they and they sit at a long table, all round a table, and they're all sitting on WCs, okay? Passing.
Yeah, okay.
Passing
the Romans
things.
Did it, didn't they?
No, but what's funny is that at some point, right, somebody very embarrassedly excuses themselves and goes out into a little cubicle and has something to eat. By themselves, and then has to come back pretending that nothing's happened, which is probably overstating a small but intriguing point, turning it into a play.
Do you know the Stuarts used to do that as well? It wasn't just the Romans, it was people more...
Oh, right.
Yeah, they used to, you know, so you'd have, you know, King Charles the First, who was known as the party king.
Yes.
And they would be, like, fine ladies and stuff going in the fireplace and stuff.
No, what?
Yeah, yeah,
really?
Yeah. People didn't wear drawers, really, till the Victorian times, so they should be able to just squat and do what they wanted to.
We've reached a very fertile impasse in the conversation. I say an impasse because we're going to play you some important messages I'd like you to listen to and broadly obey, and more than that I cannot say. 0344 499 1000, and we'll pick up in just a couple of moments where we've left off. This is Talk Radio.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
It's the Ian Lee Show on Talk Radio. I'm looking after the show whilst he's recovering from his experience in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Kath is here.
Hello.
Karen is looking after the technical side of things. So if you call the number, it's Karen you'll speak to. 0344 499 1000. We're with Julian at the moment.
Hey.
Who wanted to talk about Keith Chegwin and death.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, God, we went around the houses, didn't we?
Well, it's conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I was just wondering, when I heard Timmy Mallett, had it been Timmy Mallett who passed away, what would you have said?
Gosh.
Would you have switched to, oh, he was a good guy? Because it does change it when people die. As you say, people start saying all the good things.
What you're saying, Julian, is dish the dirt now.
Yeah, get it off your chair. Well, but I know Tommy hates Timmy Mallett.
No, I don't. I haven't got time for any hatred at all. I suppose Hitler.
Was that all an act when you used to say, oh, I hate the man? I love him.
Well, you know, just being hyperbolic. Who do I hate? I hate Hitler. I hate the Yorkshire Ripper.
This is the thing.
Timmy Mallett.
No. But do you hate Hitler? Or do you? He was a little boy once.
Have you ever heard of a comedian called Norm Macdonald?
No.
He's very dry. He plays the part of a sort of a trucker. And one of his best opening lines was, he just went, "The more I learn about Adolf Hitler, the less I like the guy." It's just a great line. It's so rich.
That is
idea of a 48-year-old American who's just hearing about him is it speaks volumes in itself.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I fell out with my dad because he hates Robert Mugabe.
And you don't?
Well, I don't like him. But I think there are other people that should be further up on the list of who we should hate.
Really? Isn't he on the list of the universally reviled?
He is, but that's the thing. But what's he done that Tony Blair hasn't done?
Out-and-out genocide?
Tony Blair killed 1 million people in Iraq.
Well, not quite as directly as Mugabe.
No, I'll have that argument with you. Do you want that argument? I'll have that argument with you. Tony Blair did not kill 1 million people in Iraq. What were the total number of casualties in the Iraq war?
He lied and conspired in order to get Saddam Hussein toppled. Saddam Hussein, who never threatened anybody.
Well, apart from his own people.
Apart from his own people. Okay, but he didn't threaten us. And this is the thing. From Morocco to Iraq, the Arab world is full of dictators. But how come we only hate certain ones? And how come we hate Robert Mugabe? Mugabe did some good things and some terrible things.
This is so ill-informed, Julian. This is so dreadfully ill-informed of you. It's astonishing that that you want to come at us with this kind of, you know, patchwork.
Where am I uninformed?
Right, okay. All right. Okay, let's take the statement that there are a great many dictators around the world and we only hate some of them. Right. Name me the dictators that we don't hate.
The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
We may not be acting against them, and indeed we may just have sold Qatar a great many fighter planes.
There's another one.
Yes. Okay. Let's try this one then. Saddam Hussein, as I understand it, was not only in charge of the fourth biggest army in the world, and therefore a considerable threat to the rest of the world, but he invaded Kuwait, which was an independent country and an act of war.
Okay.
Can you the Middle East can you can you carved... can you tell me other countries that have invaded other countries in the last 50 years? I can think of a couple. Can you think of any?
Israel, since its birth, has launched wars on all its neighbours.
But they haven't...
Aggressive wars on all its neighbours.
Right, they haven't taken over... They haven't taken... No, Julian, sorry. No, keep it tight. Can you think of any countries that have invaded other countries and have remained in occupation of those countries? Rather
Israel.
Than...
Currently occupies the whole of Palestine illegally and the land of two
neighboring
countries.
Come on, Julian, you're not a journalist or anything, are you? Really, this is such bitty stuff.
Tommy,
Israel, wait, please.
They occupy the Golan Heights.
Yes, all right, blither. Israel was given a mandate. The country of Israel was given an international mandate to occupy that territory. Right or wrong?
No, the Golan Heights are in Syria, Tommy. Yeah. I'm talking about the Golan Heights.
Talk about the Golan Heights, but the fact is, are you saying that Israel shouldn't be there at all?
They're there illegally.
That's a different argument. Look, I don't want to break up a lovely friendship.
Hey, I don't mind having a debate.
Part of having a debate is shutting up and listening sometimes, as opposed to gibbering away when the other person's talking. Thank you. Saddam Hussein hanged a man called Fazad Barzoft, if I remember correctly. Have you ever heard of him?
No. Is he Kurdish?
No, he's British.
Okay.
He was a British journalist. He was a British journalist who went to Iraq to see whether he could find information about Saddam Hussein's nuclear program. He was a British journalist who worked for The Observer and who I knew because he occasionally freelanced at Independent Radio News. And he was caught trying to take photographs of what was believed to be at the time, and I still believe it to be, the place where Saddam Hussein was trying to create enriched uranium so that he could indeed build a nuclear device. And if what Fazad Barzoft was photographing and reporting on was not what he suspected it was, I don't believe he would have been hanged by Saddam Hussein, but he was. And it's that and several other things that leads me to believe that Saddam Hussein led the arms investigators a merry dance.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. David Kelly have some information that might have suggested the Iraq war shouldn't have happened
if Saddam Hussein had nothing to hide, he would have cooperated with the arms investigators. Repeatedly reported that he was being obstructive. Now, if you're doing that, you're asking for trouble. Because you are creating the impression, as he did, to his cost, that he might indeed have been developing weapons of mass destruction. And that was the game he was playing, and he lost.
Okay, and he died. But if it came out clean that he had nothing, he would be under threat from neighbours such as the Islamic Republic of Iran next door, where I visited this year, who would want revenge for the million people killed by him at the hands of the weapons given to him by America.
He gambled by either pretending that he was creating weapons of mass destruction.
He had to throw the dice, Tommy.
Yeah, and he lost. And I, for one, believe that it is quite right to challenge to the utmost, dictators like Saddam Hussein.
Who we install. Who Britain and America install to do a job, and then they come back.
You see, what happens is this. What happens is this, Julian. Mm. In this country of ours, if a person inside his own house and garden commits crimes against his family, okay, we don't say, well, that's okay, because it's his house and garden. There's nothing we can do about it. He can carry on. But internationally, that's what happens. And internationally, there need to be lines that regimes cannot cross without fearing that there will be retribution.
And I think
we need an international police force. We need an
It should not be Britain and America.
Yes, it should. Of course it should.
No, it shouldn't, because they're like a lifeguard.
Who would you like then?
Well, I wouldn't like Britain and America, who are like some kind of lifeguard.
No, I didn't ask you who you wouldn't like, because you've already said that. I'm asking you who you would like
Russia.
To be.
Russia. I would like Russia.
Oh, you'd like Russia.
Putin, who's defeating ISIS in Syria. He defeated them today.
So you would rather that Putin...
Yes, I would.
...was the international police force. Okay, well, we'll leave it at that.
I had to choose.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much indeed for a very interesting 10 minutes. I think. What do you say?
It's interesting that he differentiates between Putin and other dictators that he's named as taking over countries, when Putin's been in Ukraine since, what, 2013?
About then, yeah.
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 That's okay, though, is it?
I don't know. I think Julian was shooting from the hip, which is fine on talk radio. 0344 499 1000 is the number. It's around about 11:30. What should we do? Let's have a word with Glyn, who's called from Stockport. Hello, Glyn.
I'm a magpie baby from a long time ago.
Aye, aye.
Nice to speak to you. I just want to say one thing about Julian's conversation about the Americans and being the British being the police force of the world, and when we went into Iran. Why aren't we in Korea? Because their weapons of mass destruction have been proven.
Ah, but have they?
Well, according to all the earthquakes that are going on and
exactly.
Trembles,
you see, exactly. How do we know for sure that North Korea has got a nuclear device?
Well, how do we know for sure that Iran had weapons of mass destruction?
Iraq. But anyway.
Sorry, Iran.
Yeah, okay.
I think we know for sure that Iran does, don't we?
Iran does?
Yeah.
How do you know for sure that anybody's got a nuclear... How do you know for sure, Glyn, that anybody's got a nuclear device?
Because there's eight countries that have signed up to the nuclear agreement.
What evidence is there that anybody has let off a nuclear device ever?
Hiroshima, Nagasaki.
Well, the destruction that was caused, tragically... to those two cities.
Actually, Tommy,
I nearly finished
a
sentence.
I'll finish it because it's a good sentence. Story.
No, I'll go first.
Go on.
The destruction, awful as it was, that was visited on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, was less than the destruction that was visited on Tokyo a week before by conventional firebombing.
It doesn't matter. The nuclear weapon
did to
was
them.
Dropped.
No, you can't. No. What's your evidence? Go on. Let's try this one. What's your evidence there's ever been that anybody's ever got a nuclear device, ever had a nuclear device that does what it says on the tin?
Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Well, I've just said to you that that may have been conventional firebombing.
Yes, but I actually knew a guy who guarded the plane called the Enola Gay.
So?
Right.
We need a bit more than that, mate. Really, considering the scale of what we're talking about here, which is, you know, nuclear holocaust or not, you need a bit more than knowing a guy who guarded Enola Gay. What was the bomb that Enola Gay carried?
I can't remember. It was a stupid name for the bomb.
The Fat Man.
But the plane.
Where did the Fat Man? How come they called it the Fat Man?
I don't know. You tell me.
I will. It comes from The Maltese Falcon, in which the character who was pursuing something that turned out to be completely bogus, namely the Maltese Falcon, was called the Fat Man. And if you were a good conspiracy theorist, and sometimes I am, I would say that they named it the Fat Man in honour of the man who was pursuing something that was fake in the Maltese Falcon, because the bomb that they carried that day wasn't what it purported to be. Just like the Maltese Falcon wasn't what it purported to be.
Yes,
okay, got that one. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very good.
You see, the fact is, you don't know... You don't know that there are any nuclear devices out there, for sure.
Well, are you telling me that one was never dropped in this world?
You don't know. No, what I'm telling you is, you choose to believe what you've been told. That's fine. Sometimes I do that, but not very often.
Well, that's very deep, Tommy, because that's going down to core beliefs.
Correct. Correct. If I'm prepared to question the existence of God, I think I'm perfectly entitled to question the existence of lesser things, such as nuclear bombs. I think you should question everything, don't you, Glyn?
Did you question the motor car?
Question everything.
Oh,
and I recommend it to you. Glyn, thanks very much indeed for your call.
No.
Got a bit heated tonight. I'm quite enjoying myself.
I can see the hackles are up, but in a deliciously spiky way.
Thank you. I think so. Is there any such thing as a nuclear bomb, a nuclear device? Could it not have been concocted by the Allies at the end of the Second World War in order to ensure that Stalin didn't roll his tanks and troops right across Western Europe, as probably was his design, if the Americans took their forces out of Europe to deploy them in the Pacific in order to pursue Japan, leaving Europe absolutely defenceless, unless they had a mystery weapon, which, curiously enough, was discovered the night of the Potsdam Convention.
Right.
With Stalin, the Americans, and Churchill. With Stalin saying how much he wanted in order, how much of the world he wanted in order to call it quits. And then Churchill and the Americans turned up the next morning and said, actually, we've got this bomb. Really? We've got this bomb. And it can, one of them can take out entire cities, Joe. That happened.
So Hiroshima was a hydrogen bomb, right?
Allegedly. No, an atomic bomb.
Was it an atomic bomb?
Hydrogen bombs came in 52.
Right, okay. Yeah, well, It could be right, couldn't it?
Oh, just question things. Why not question
things?
Why
would someone invent something that would ensure total annihilation?
Ah, but it didn't. It actually ensured world peace for 50 years.
Mm.
Ah. Mm.
If it were real...
Sounds
if
strange.
It were real.
Yeah. If it were real.
Someone would have chanced it by now, wouldn't they?
Yes. Someone would have let one off. Mm. There were plenty of... General MacArthur during the Korean War.
Just to show people.
Yeah. Allegedly. When it looked as though the Americans, the Allies, because we were there and the Australians and others in the Korean War, it looked as though the Chinese support for North Korea was going to tip the balance. MacArthur went to the White House and said, I think we should let off a device. It produced one of the great headlines of all time when MacArthur left America and flew back to run the Korean War. It was a great headline in the Washington Post. It said, General MacArthur flies back to front.
Yeah. If you had something that powerful, why would you put it on a submarine, like an enclosed capsule, with lots of innocent men and women?
Are you coming
around
to this conspiracy theory?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Okay. 0344, I should say, 499-1000 is the number. If you call the switchboard, we will call you back and look after the cost of the call, obviously. You can text the word talk and then your message to 87222, or you can tweet us at Talk Radio. It's the Ian Lee Show with Tommy Boyd looking after things. Kath is here and Karen is pressing the buttons like this.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
On Twitter, Lane, a.k.a. Huey, has tweeted, the man, the legend, Norman MacDonald, Norm MacDonald, at Norm MacDonald, has a plethora of Hitler jokes. It's they're really jokes against himself and Middle America, rather than jokes about Hitler. But anyway, thank you for that, Lane. Peter has said, should Trump give New York back to the Apaches for Christmas? P.S. Tony Blair should be in jail. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Crikey. He was voted in as Prime Minister by the electorate post whatever it is some people love to think he did wrong. John Doe has tweet, this Tommy guy has to be the most uninformed guy I've ever heard on the radio regarding the Middle East and what dictators we. A man who can't even count up to 140. Or is it 280 now?
It is, yeah.
Well, in that case, maybe he thinks it's still 140.
It's self-editing.
Yeah.
It's an extreme.
Okay, give us a call, mate.
Tommy Boyd is on fire on Talk Radio this evening. Thought-provoking stuff with some lively callers. That's from Cameron Ward. And Fish has tweeted, if North Korea are not at least trying to develop WMDs, then why are we sanctioning the hell out of them? Well, that's because, Fish, of their political position. North Korea actually claims to be the last Marxist state on earth. Am I right?
Mm. Well, other than China.
Well, China is capitalist communism at the moment, isn't it? Although I understand that the president is requiring all of his inner team, cabinet, if you like, to reread Karl Marx. So they may be going back into that direction, but they've lurched into the world of commerce and capitalism, haven't they, in order to provide themselves with the income and the finance in order to turn around what's often called the infrastructure of their country. 03444991000 is the number. If you want to talk about some of the more serious topics that have appeared on the show this evening, then I'd rather you called than sort of sniped away with a little tweet. 03444991000 is the number. Ian is our next caller.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. You?
Yes, very well, thank you. Just a quick one, a little bit lighthearted than what you were speaking about before. But you were talking about the possibility of the universe contracting and then expanding.
Uh-huh.
So things would happen in reverse. So is there a chance that we might see you back on the afternoon show between 3 and 7 on Talk Radio?
The afternoon show between 3 and 7?
Yeah, you used to do 3 to 7 on Talk Radio years ago, didn't you?
Well, that was on day one.
All right, OK, sorry.
But that was just another show. What I liked happened about 3 years later when I ended up 2 to 4 in the afternoon in what I always call, as Larkin put it, the hollow of the afternoon, when nobody knows quite what to do on a radio station that doesn't play music.
Right.
And so I came up with this idea of doing a comedy phone-in show where I, as the presenter, would make statements and have opinions that were clearly utterly ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
in order that the 5% of the listeners who were dumb enough to think that anybody could possibly believe that would ring up for an argument.
And I did actually take you up on that once on
did
that
you?
Show. You probably won't remember this, but you were talking about what could replace religion.
Oh, yeah.
And I moved to the idea. Do you remember the presenter who was on previous to you on the afternoon was Emma Rayburn?
Yes.
And I moved to the idea of getting rid of all the churches and cloning Emma Rayburn, and then you solved the problem.
Okay.
That was kind of what I came up with at the time when we spoke about that. But it's great to hear you back on the radio again anyway.
Thank you. No, I tried some things. I was largely provoked by a Scottish genius called Peter G.
Uh-huh.
Who would come up with ideas for the show. He'd come in and he said, "Oh, Tommy, why don't you suggest that we give Yorkshire to the Cherokees?" Which was a brilliant idea. I ran with that. But we'd also just do things to annoy people. Like one day I said, you know, jet skis. They're fantastic. Because everybody who hasn't got a jet ski finds them really annoying. You know, you're down on the beach and all of a sudden there's this twerp on a jet ski going vow, 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 vow. So they're very annoying. So instead of saying they're very annoying, which is what I think they are, I said they were fantastic. Because it would get these people ringing up who had no notion of the concept of irony. So thank you for the memory anyway, Ian. That was
okay, cheers.
The thrust of that. Good lad. Good lad. North Korea is the only necrocracy in the world, plural of necrocracies. This is from CJ, a government that still operates under the rules of a dead former, I presume the next word would have been leader, if we'd had room for it. Who was that then? So we've got Kim Jong-un at the moment.
And it was ill before.
Kim Jong-il, yes. And before that, it was Kim Jong-il's father, not Korean, but Russian, in fact.
I don't know.
I think so, because of the fact that Korea is one of those countries that has been fought over for such a long time. It's hardly surprising that I'm not saying it's right, but it's hardly surprising that the North Korean government want to protect their country and put a great big fence around it and tell everybody else to go away and please stop frightening them and bothering them, is one way of looking at it. I don't know anything about the atrocities that are supposed to have taken place in North Korea that everybody is so upset about. I suspect that it is something of a country where you ought not speak ill of the president, that's for sure. And the fact that his brother may have been... His brother may have been murdered by... on the orders of Kim Jong-un. That's awful. If that's the case. But as far as, you know, mass atrocities go, possibly no worse than some of the things that are happening in half the nations on Earth. This is not to defend North Korea, but simply putting some perspective on the way in which we regard, you know, four legs good, two legs bad. Which is from, because you're so learned.
I don't know.
Animal Farm.
Oh, I've never read that.
And it's not a very good read. It's a book, as you know, which is about... it's a satire on the whole business of politics and regimes and what have you. I'm an ex-Royal Marine, tweets somebody who only credits themselves as being a telephone number. I'm an ex-Royal Marine, served on a nuclear sub, and I have met with Russian KGB in the 80s. Believe me, aside from copious video evidence, comma. Is our message machine not giving us the full set of messages? Because that's the third one I've read out that appears to have ended...
Let me have a look. Let me see.
...mid-sentence.
Let me have a look.
Whilst you're doing that, I'll set out our stall for what is usually, traditionally, a much lighter final hour of the programme. But if we're going to discuss nuclear holocaust... Ah, thank you, Kath. Kath, show me the entire message, which I will now happily... read. Thank you, Royal Marine, for your message. And your message. I'm an ex-Royal Marine, served on a nuclear sub, and have met with Russian KGB in the 80s. Believe me, aside from copious video evidence, aside from the theory behind sustaining a fission nuclear chain reaction, in brackets, itself enough to count as evidence, there are nuclear weapons. The largest ever tested was by the Soviets in the 1960s. This was a hydrogen bomb. If only it was a conspiracy, it isn't. Well, look, give me a call and we'll have the argument if you're up to it. If you're an ex-Royal Marine, I'd be very surprised if you're not up for an argument. The bomb that you're talking about, I think it was called the Tsar bomb, that was let off on an extremely remote island off the north coast of Russia in the 60s. Nobody saw it. There are no photographic, there's no photographic evidence of it. And if you look at the satellite pictures now of that island, and I have done this, there is no evidence whatsoever that any device was ever left off. And where was the crater? Where was the crater at Nagasaki? Where was the crater at Hiroshima? Where is the crater on the island north of the Russian coast where this bomb, supposedly 500 times the size of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, was set off? Where, ex-Royal Marine? Tell me. The fact that you've sat in on board a submarine that had nuclear missiles on it doesn't mean to say that you can be certain that that's what they were. Can you? The telephone number's 03444991000. I wanted to talk about some of the silly things that you get in the tedious verbal diarrhea that you get all over the place, Kath. Certainly in office situations, but also on local radio news, we were talking the other day about if you're killed, found in a ditch, your obituary is that you are a Chichester man.
Yes.
Was found in a ditch this morning. Yeah? And another one that you get, not just on local radio news, is the news story is reported like this. It goes, aliens have been living at number 33 Acacia Avenue, Penge, for the last 15 years. That's according to the man who lives next door. That's according to...
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
The that's according to comes after the statement that is almost certainly...
Yeah.
Cojones.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's another one.
Go on.
Householders called the police following the robbery.
Following the robbery.
At what point? No one says that.
Yes. Yes.
Police were called to X Village in Chichester.
Yes.
After reports of...
After reports.
Yeah. I mean, obviously...
Yes.
No, well, that's not even after reports. No, that's... Amid reports, surely.
Amid reports. But that, yes. So there's that hunt for... That elusive hunt for accuracy, isn't there? Going forward is a particular bugbear of mine. It gets tacked on the end of somebody saying what they think ought to happen. And they think that by tacking going forward onto the end of it,
yeah,
it somehow makes it seem more executive.
Going forward is the modern way of saying in future, isn't it?
Yeah, in the future. I mean, how can you do anything other than, you know, go forward? Programme titles. I'm getting bored with the word ultimate everywhere.
Yeah.
Ultimate gets used when it's just another guide to the Lake District.
I know exactly what you
mean. No, that's not good enough, says the editor. Let's call it the ultimate guide to the Lake District. If that was true, it would be the last guide to the Lake District that was ever needed.
It's like the best album in the world ever. 12. Hang on a minute. What happened to the first one?
Exactly. We have at the moment the ultimate Jamie's Christmas. Until next year, folks.
Exactly.
Another one is you get a television programme which is distinctly ordinary in content and in, you know, idea. But if you tack somebody who's important onto it, so we've got at the moment both Julie Walters' Coastal Railways.
Yeah.
Vying against Michael Portillo's Railway Journeys up against Mary Berry's Stately Homes.
Gosh, that's a lot of days out.
Well, exactly. Do DJs, or is it only down my way, still say there you go?
What, the it's end phrase, of things?
Well, just all over the place.
So there you go.
There you go. Do they? They do. And also, will you shoot me if I ever, ever describe either the weather or the travel news as all important?
Mm.
Now it's time for the all important weather. Oh, it's been cold. That makes it all important. Another one is England are playing in the World Cup qualifiers. They've played two games. Every game thereafter is described as crucial. For England's crucial World Cup qualifier against the Ukraine. It's always crucial. I know it's important to try and make what you're talking about sound as important as possible, but I do think, you know, it's slightly insulting to the listener and the viewer's intelligence. We talked the other day, Kath, about how the word so has taken over from well. Yeah. So instead of saying, well, I thought that I would... It's so. But also... And also we talked about clear being used all over the place in politics.
Uh-huh.
But I now scream... Whenever I hear anybody doing a newspaper review, and they begin by saying, and the government's plans for Brexit dominate the papers this morning. All it means is there's one top story, yeah, and everybody's got it. But that doesn't sound quite so good as dominate. Or are we getting some kind of trawling of the presenter-stroke-journalist's inner urges when they dwell on that word in the way that they do? The government's plans for Brexit dominate. Or am I reading too much?
I think that the use of the word dominate is very carefully placed so that we feel like what we're doing is more important than
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. You should be a producer.
Well, funny you should mention that.
Police only ever swoop.
I know. And people being rushed to hospital rather than dawdled.
Well, until police became cops. Because the words have to be as short as possible. So no longer do the police either swoop or the cops either swoop or they raid.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
Swoop. For heaven's sake, what, they've got bat wings on.
When the newspapers say that there is fury over something.
A backlash.
Is there any fury? Is anybody actually furious when you see fury over?
Yeah.
Who gets furious about the things that they're supposed to be fury over? Outrage. Outcry. You've got to dandy the news up a little bit.
Do you know what I do like? I love a tirade.
A tirade?
Yes.
Yes.
He launched a furious tirade.
A rant. We talked the other day about, in sport, when a footballer does something reasonably well, it's either all credit to the lad or fair play to the lad. And I said that anybody who knows their football will know exactly the difference between all credit to the lad and fair play to the lad.
Yeah.
Because there is a difference. It's just that, you know,
is all credit for someone who's not done so well as he could have? Is it all credit but?
Well, we're rushing towards the news, the all-important news. And so we'll get back to that afterwards. Here is the all-important news and indeed the all-important weather on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
OK, I've had an interesting show this evening. The first hour was very much given to Ian Lee. It is his show. And he's now in Australia breakfasting with a whole bunch of people, friends and family and all the other contestants and technicians and producers, I guess, from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Second hour got quite heated, actually, with various discussions about important world events. Quite
powerful. And kind of our priorities when it came to which bad guy we were going to defeat first.
Yeah. So here's the question, good listener. I'm asking you this, listening, right? Are you an alpha, male or female, or whatever else there is? Because you don't hear very many people described as beta, do you, Kath?
No.
But that's what you would be, isn't it? You'd be alpha, beta...
Gamma.
Gamma, is it?
I think so, yeah.
Delta? Or is that the radio alphabet? I get lost.
I'm not sure.
Alpha, beta, gamma, delta,
if you get
echo,
to delta,
foxtrot.
Exactly. G would be what?
But anyway.
Golf.
So I vary. There are situations where I think possibly I'm a little bit too alpha or just, you know, plain good old alpha. Mm. But broadly speaking, I think I'm beta plus.
Isn't it about other people's perception of you rather than your own?
Yes, it's everybody. Yes, it is. I was interested in something that Ian said earlier when he was tackled about was he being bullied by some of the other people on I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah.
And Ian said, what I would like to say is, no, I don't think I was being bullied. Because if you admit that you were being bullied, or even that somebody was trying to bully you, it feels rather as though you've been emasculated, that anybody could possibly bully you.
Mm.
After all, Ian is a wordsmith, and all they had in the jungle is words. So if anybody was bullying him, they were trying to get the better of him using Ian's particular weapon of choice,
yeah,
if you like.
Watching it, what I saw was him being very restrained, and I thought, if at any point he unleashes that particular power of his, it will seem unfair, actually, yeah, because for all the bluster and bravado from the other guys, intellectually he was there better.
Yeah. So why didn't he then? He didn't drop his guard, did he?
No.
He didn't loose one off at any point.
I think because he has more emotional intelligence than they do.
I'm glad you mentioned emotional intelligence because I was reading up on it this afternoon apropos nothing at all. I found myself there. I've been Googling something else. And we'll talk about nouns that become verbs a little bit later on because that's what it was with Google, wasn't it? Google is a noun and now everybody Googles, so it's become a verb. Emotional intelligence, how do you define it?
I define it as knowing yourself and moderating your behaviour according to your feelings.
Knowing yourself.
A lot of it is about that, yeah. Understanding your feelings.
Understanding your feelings. Okay. So what are you feeling at the moment?
I am feeling...
Good question, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling relaxed. This is kind of my environment.
Okay.
But I'm also being very careful as to the words I use because at this point I know that some tabloids are listening in and hoping for me to let loose some sort of unguarded and inadvisable comment.
Oh, I see. Outside of the Ian Lee thing?
No.
No.
Totally, so with regard to that.
Right, so you're keeping your guard up.
I'm just being really careful, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, have I crossed the line?
No.
No, you sure?
Positive.
Well, you say that. So two-faced producers.
I'm not.
He went off on one, and I couldn't stop him, and I'm really sorry. Are you firing him? Oh, don't fire me.
No, not at all. No, not at all. That doesn't happen. I think I've got quite a good... way of expressing myself through my face. And so a lot of my producerly interactions are through my expressions.
Facial expressions.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, just quickly, Alistair's tweet. You can tweet us at Talk Radio. I'm a theta male, which I guess means there's a little bit of sort of self-deprecation there.
Mm.
I did one of... Have you ever done one of those psychobabble profiles?
Yeah.
Where... What were you?
For my first job.
What were you?
I don't know. I had to fill out a whole... About 4 or 5 pages of A4 of different kind of scenarios, and I don't know. I got the job.
Right.
I probably wouldn't fill it out the same now. It was all about...
What sort of questions were you asked?
Do you modify your behaviour according to who you speak to? That kind of stuff.
Well, surely we all do, don't we?
I didn't think I did then, but I was but I was 22.
Oh.
Now I recognise that I do.
Yes. Well, how can you not?
Mm.
And is it... why do you do it? Why do we modify our behaviour? Why do people change who they are according to who they're with?
Because I think the laws of... I think the laws of survival mean that you change your behaviour in order to manipulate people, and I'm saying that carefully.
Yeah,
I mean, manipulate people to do what you need them to do.
Right.
And so if you realise something works for you, you're going to go with that, aren't you?
Is emotional intelligence the right word for what we're talking about here? Because it seems to me that what we're just talking about is like being in touch with yourself and understanding that at the moment you're feeling angry...
Mm.
But that's, you know, going to pass. At the moment, you're feeling a little bit elated, and that's probably unjustified, and it will pass.
But what you're talking about there is recognising your emotions. And I think that the emotional intelligence thing goes with recognising your emotions and knowing how they should be managed. I think that what happened in the jungle was quite a few people let their emotions get the better of them.
Okay.
And it allowed them to act out.
Right, CJ has tweeted, I'm an Omega male. And Hedy has tweeted, beware Kath's Paddington stare. Do we know what that might be?
I think they mean, you know, the when you cross the line.
How does it go?
I don't know. I don't do it very often. I guess, it's, you know, Paddington has a hard stare, doesn't he? It stops people in their tracks.
Whilst we're merely having a conversation, but hopefully a useful one to you listening, you know, maybe... I don't know, you're in the living room and the telly's off and the radio or the laptop is keeping you company. Or maybe you're in bed or driving along, possibly, or podcasting. I can't remember what I was going to say there because I got sort of distracted by the various... By centering, really, with people who are listening.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that. It's Paddington. Apparently it's really good, Paddington 2.
I've heard that it's amazing.
And adults are going to see it without children just because they've heard it's such a good movie that you will cry in a good way.
My kids put the Emoji Movie on today.
Okay, what's that?
That lost me after about 2 minutes. It's about the emojis that you have inside your telephone. Beyond that, I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
It lost me. But apparently, yes, Paddington is wonderful and a film worth seeing whether you're a child or not.
Yes, allegedly.
Have you seen Up?
No.
Oh, that is a film and a half.
What's that about?
It's about, well, it depends who you're talking to. To an adult, it's about realising you don't need stuff and that you drag around a lot of belongings and things with you in your life that you think you need. And actually, by the end, you realise that it's people that you need rather than... But it's wonderful in that it was probably the first Pixar film that... turned the children's cartoon genre on its head. So within the first 5 minutes, everything you thought it was setting up for you, happy family, children, babies, all that stuff, was destroyed and you realised that it was the story of a widower.
Oh.
Who'd had a really sad life,
yeah.
But with a wonderful wife and they'd built their life around each other. It's a great film. Considering it was made for children, actually, I think there's one film for the children and there's a whole other film that the adults are seeing.
Yeah, those are the best films.
Yeah.
The best films that the family can watch and everybody's getting something out of it. The first one I saw like that, I think, was Shrek.
Oh, Shrek is so good.
Good film. Good film. I always knew... this is another tweet. This is from Steffi Woodcock. Thank you, Steffi, for taking the time. I always knew I was never a beta male and I'm now more than happy being a beta female.
Ah.
So that's cool. Now, I'm going
to... That's the thing I would love to hear. Steffi, if you'd give us a ring, I would love to hear you telling us about that. That moment when you realise, hang on, I'm not one of the boys, and actually I'm not a boy at all.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of men out there who, you know, recognise that they don't really fit in with the kind of jockey, sport boys, you know, kind of stereotypical masculine, quote-unquote, ideal.
Mm.
But something else to realise that you're not a man at all.
I'm just trying to think whether there was any time in my past when I was younger. Obviously, I couldn't refer you to a conversation we had earlier. I couldn't imagine what it was like at some point in the future. But at some point in the past, when I was forming, I suppose I'd be 10, 11, 12, did I wonder about my sexuality? You do. But, you know, I turned out to be tediously heterosexual. But had I had any vulnerabilities... that would have been difficult for me back in the 60s. Probably still is difficult now, of course.
Yeah.
But less difficult perhaps now. Or no, as difficult, but in different ways. Because now doors are open. But I just wonder whether there are people who might find themselves drawn towards those open doors. Because those doors are open, because they're receiving an awful lot of justifiable attention and consideration... and people are being presented with more complex problems or considerations than they used to, with the best will in the world by those who are putting those things out there. But I don't know, I suppose I'm saying, is there room for confusion where there wasn't before?
Mm.
And might some people decide to take a path that might not actually work out for them, but that they wouldn't have taken out 30 or 40 years ago? And that's the longest question I've ever asked anybody in my life, but I'm asking you, Kat.
Do you mean, can I unpick it? Do you mean that rather than simply thinking I must be gay, they're thinking that perhaps I'm in the wrong body?
I don't actually know. But I'm just trying to think of all the different shades of sexuality and gender identity that people can have. And whether during, you know, the onset of all these hormones, which is, crikey, apparently happening earlier and earlier with young people, there are moments when you're drawn in different directions, which, left to your own devices, you might well come through without lots and lots of complicated worries and thoughts and considerations.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays, because there is so much discussion about things which... frankly, there's too many considerations for my little brain to be able to get my head around, frankly. And I feel it has to be a good thing. I hope it's a good thing, because one always hopes that the world is becoming a better place, and I think generally speaking it is. But what I'm saying is, would I be, if I was a 10, 11, 12-year-old now, would I be saying to myself, asking myself questions that I didn't know existed 40 years ago?
I understand that. I don't know the answer. I know that as a parent, maybe my eyes are more open to possibilities than my parents might have been.
Mm.
So while I wouldn't nudge my children in any one direction, maybe I'm more observant and thoughtful about where they are in their lives. And while I don't think anyone can ever be ready for the path less travelled, you know, we're in a position now where there is more information available to us. So, you know, maybe there are more places to go if you think, all right, hang on a minute, I think we might be heading in that direction rather. I don't know.
How old are yours?
They're very little. My children are 6 and 9.
Do you talk about them on the air at all or not really?
I do talk about them on air. I never name them.
Okay.
But, you know, I've got two little girls, two very different little girls. One who's... The older one is very thoughtful and appears to be more withdrawn, but actually it's not. I think she's actually more self-confident in that she doesn't feel like she needs to give anyone anything. You know, she doesn't feel like she needs to please anyone, whereas my youngest is a lot more like me. She's very chatty and apparently more outgoing, but I think she's actually quite a nervous person.
Mm.
But they're both wonderful in their own ways. And from the moment I knew I was having them, I never found out whether they were girls or boys, because I thought it was their own business.
Fair enough.
A lot of my contemporaries were finding out and naming them and sort of painting bedrooms and buying clothes for people that they didn't know yet. And I found that very... it wasn't my way of doing things. But then, you know, these days you've got to recognise that just because you have what is ostensibly a little girl or a little boy, you don't know who you're going to end up with when they're grown up.
No, that's so true. That is so true. You know, you said to Steffi, give us a call and we'll talk about it. Hi, Steffi.
Hello.
Hi, Steffi.
Hi.
So you are now a she?
Yes.
And you were a he?
Yes, I suppose, if you want to put it in simplistic terms, yeah.
Oh, well, I've taken it from your tweet. So you flesh it out a little bit for us.
Oh, gosh, where do I start? I was interested to hear what you were saying about, you know, your sexuality and stuff, because people often confuse sexuality with gender. And the two actually... Yeah, I suppose there are links, but they're not inextricably linked. I mean, I can remember from as early as my earliest thoughts, knowing that my body kind of didn't match with who I was inside. And so, you know, I knew from about the age of three that, you know, I was a girl.
Three?
Yeah, yeah. My earliest memories, yeah.
A lot of people can't remember anything of being three.
No, those are my earliest memories. I can remember.
What was your go on? Can you remember literally what your earliest memory was, or was it something you were looking at or hearing, or was it something you were feeling?
My earliest memory, funnily enough, is being in my back garden and a spider jumping out at me. So that was something quite traumatic.
Okay.
But I can also remember around about the same age playing in the back garden on my slide with my girlfriend back then. When I say my girlfriend, obviously, you know, one of my friends from nursery. And, you know, most of my friends were girls anyway. So that was kind of a big clue, I think.
Okay, Steffi, you're listening to the Ian Lee Show. Tommy Boyd looking after things whilst Ian is on his way back from Australia, and I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Kath is here and Karen is standing by if you want to give us a call. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Steffi, text us to say, I always knew I was never a beta male and I'm now more than happy being a beta female. And Kath said, Steffi, give us a call because it would be great to talk to you, and that's what Steffi's done, and we'll continue the conversation in a moment.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Karen's looking after the technology and the phones. If you call, I'll do the number in just a second. Kath is here. I'm Tommy Boyd, looking after things for Ian Lee, whose show this is. Steffi sent us a tweet earlier. I always knew we were talking about alpha and beta males and females and things. Steffi tweeted, I always knew I was never a beta male, and so now I'm more than happy being a beta female. So Kath said, Steffi, give us a call because it would be great to talk about it. And Steffi's done that. So thanks for that. Where did we get to before those commercial messages, Steffi?
Earliest memories, really, I think.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
Being three and knowing you were a girl.
Yeah. Can I just incidentally say, I was already a fan of Kath's and Ian's with the Rabbit Hole podcast and everything. But I'm really made up to hear you back on the radio, Tommy. I'm a fan of yours from, gosh, well, let's say the Magpie days, but also the Talk Radio UK days.
Yes, I've been around a bit.
You're a proper radio geek then, Steffi.
I am a bit.
Good.
I got a letter in the post this morning telling me that my state pension is due in about 3 days' time.
Oh, wow.
But,
oh, bloody hell.
I know, but here's the bit. Apparently, I have some earnings from abroad which have to be calculated into the final amount, but I don't know what they are. I think possibly it's because I once got a cheque for £1.20 for an episode of a children's television programme called Woof that I appeared in and that was broadcast in Saudi Arabia.
I liked Woof.
It was a good programme. Very good programme. Everyone remembers Woof. That's good. But I was in an episode and I got paid £700 for it. And then they showed it again in Saudi Arabia and I got a cheque for £1.20. Less than the postage, actually. And And I think that's what the people at the pension office are querying. And I'm really worried in case they report me to the Inland Revenue. And it turns out that I didn't pay tax on £1.20 in 1985. But anyway, Steph, it's not about me, it's about you. Your earliest memory that you were uncomfortable in a boy's body, you said, incredibly, was around about the age of 3.
Have we lost Steffi? We've lost Karen, I know that.
Is Steph there, Karen? You there, Steffi?
You need to give her a ring back, I think.
Yeah, give her a ring back. No problem. CJ's tweeted, was about to go to bed, but this amazing woman braved the phone and rang in. So good on you. It's amazing to hear you. And Sally has tweeted, definitely born an alpha, spent a long time as an omega, but I'm back up to a beta at the moment. I think it's official. Children do begin as alphas.
Well, first children, maybe.
No, babies are very alpha. It's just about themselves.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even know they exist.
Isn't it true that until the age of 7, you've got no perception, you've got no empathy with anyone else?
To the age of?
7. I'm sure someone told me that. Developmentally, you can't understand what it is to be somebody else.
I was brought up on a Swiss educationalist called Jean Piaget.
All right.
Who first devised the notion that there were sort of like 7 ages of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And largely, broadly speaking, our education system is still based on what Piaget said, which is why, for example, everybody goes from junior school to secondary school at the age of 11, because that's when they're able to tackle semi-abstract concepts. I'm getting fairly boring here.
No, you're not.
But it's kind of, you can actually lay the template of what Freud said about us going through our id period and then our ego period and then our superego period over what Piaget discovered and said, and it seems to be more or less the same.
Right.
And the age of 7 is a crucial age, approximately, for most children, which again is why our education system begins formal education at the age of 7 in this country and in most others around the world. In Sweden, they don't begin any education at all until they are 7. So it's broadly speaking, an important stage in their development. But we'll come back to that another time.
Okay.
Steffi's back. Hi, Steffi.
Yes.
We were wondering if you could remember, and how vividly you could remember, the moment when you were a 3-year-old, when you felt that you weren't really a boy.
It was never sort of like a Damascene moment, really. I just kind of always knew it, and then I kind of grew up knowing that how I actually was different to how the world perceived me. And I did try to fit into that box of how the world perceived me for quite a long time.
Mm.
And it was only 5 years ago, when I was 48, that I actually started my gender transition journey. And earlier on this year, I suppose you can say I completed it. But, we're always on our own journeys, aren't we? So,
What was it about 48 that meant that you thought, right, now is the time?
I think several factors, really. One being my son was 16 and was kind of the age where he could handle things like that, really.
Yeah.
And he was quite cool about it. He just said, is this a midlife crisis thing? And I said, no, if it was a midlife crisis, it'd have 2 wheels and a lot of chrome.
You're speaking to someone who just bought a scooter. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. So I said, no, it's a little bit more involved than that.
Gosh. Had you been hanging on then, waiting for the moment when he would be ready?
Amongst other things, yeah. Mainly, I think, for the time when I was ready and sort of when society was ready.
Yeah.
I mean, 5 years ago was a hell of a different time to how we are now. I mean, a lot of trans stuff seems to be in the headlines at the moment. But 5 years ago, it kind of wasn't,
Yeah.
And but I still felt ready. And so it kind of just happened. I literally could not deny my true self anymore.
Yeah.
I'd been through the suicide attempts and things like that,
and the long-term depression and what have you. I'm still on antidepressants, you know, because the symptoms don't go away that quickly, but the causative factors have been largely dealt with now, so...
What do you use? Yeah.
At the moment, I'm on venlafaxin, which is, you know, quite potent stuff.
Yeah. What sort of dose?
187.5, twice a day.
I'm guessing that's quite high.
That's the maximum dose, yeah.
Okay. And what are the supposed...
I was put on that because I was getting anxiety symptoms as well, though, but yeah, sorry, tell me.
People that I talk to who use medication, and you should, if it's prescribed, of course, say that it can, besides numbing you to the things that can make you sad and lost and confused, it can numb you to some of the nicer things, the better things.
Absolutely.
Is that the case for you? Oh, really?
Yes, it was. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I mean, my view on antidepressants and the like, you know, all the antipsychotics, well, not antipsychotics per se, but antidepressants, certainly, is you're down a hole and the antidepressants are literally the ladder to help you climb out of the hole. You've actually got to get on that ladder and climb out yourself.
I understand that. I understand that. And I understand that it's kind of just a safety net for the time being while you work out all that other stuff.
Yeah, completely.
Well,
yeah.
What else do you do? What do you do with your days, if I may ask?
Looking for work at the moment because I have been out of work for a little while because, my actual mental health had deteriorated significantly that I wasn't going out of the house and, you know, I was literally a prisoner within my own four walls and everything. That's not the case now. But as I mentioned, you know, I did have anxiety symptoms, some quite severe anxiety problems. And it's only really been this year that they have abated and they are under control again, you know. So, you know, I'm not just talking about the usual social anxiety and sort of like minor phobias, you know. It literally got in the way of a hell of a lot of my life.
So getting a job is a target.
Yes.
That's your own target, not one that somebody or some other people or what you have encouraged you towards. It's what you have decided yourself you want to do.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
In what sort of field?
Oh, good Lord. I used to be a nurse back in the day, but I know darn well that I couldn't handle the stress anymore. And lots of my friends who are still in nursing, you know, they kind of dissuade me, you know, which is not to say it's not still a fabulous job, but they know me.
No, I know what you mean. I often say that everybody should be a nurse for 3 to 5 years. Yeah. And everybody should be a police officer for 3 to 5 years and a teacher for 3 to 5 years. Those three things in particular would, I think, be a very valuable experience for all of us, myself included, I have to say. So not the National Health then, or however you nursed, but what sort of things are you applying for, if I may ask?
Pretty much anything and everything at the moment, really. In my time, you know, I've been a cleaner as well, you know, and I'm not above rolling my sleeves up and, you know, cleaning up loos for a living and what have you. It's just all about getting self-confidence and self-worth back again. And I've done retail, I've done some admin as well, you know, so I'm looking, you know, I'm not without skills.
And what's your social network like?
I'm pretty good, actually. Yeah, yeah. I've got a lot of good close friends. These days, in the days of social networking, you know, a lot of them are scattered around the country. But you know, I do get to see them when I can. But I've got some good friends close by as well, so that's really good. I've got a partner up in Halifax, and you know, he's lovely. So, yeah.
Do you realise how amazing you are? You've come a long way, and you could have been stuck in a rut for years. And I guess you couldn't, because you got to a point where you couldn't live like that anymore. But there are loads of people, and there'll be people listening now who think, "My God, I wish I had half the guts that Steffi has."
Well, actually, a friend of mine at the time when I first came out as trans, and she was quite a you know, quite a big lady, quite well endowed and what have you. And if I may say this on the radio, she said, bloody hell, she said, you've got some balls on you. She said, but you're bloody getting them removed, aren't you? And I said, well, yeah. So, but I just think you've got to live your own truth and be true to yourself. Yeah. And only then can you begin to be, you know, true to others and, you know, give... It all sounds a bit altruistic, but, you know, I was nursing for 20-odd years, and, you know, I don't really ever feel that I gave 100% of myself, whereas, you know, now in a different area, perhaps I could. So, I'd like to do that.
If you could talk to yourself 10 to 15 years ago, now, what would you say?
I'd say just do it. Just do it. Just have the courage of your convictions. Just be true to yourself. You may lose friends and family along the way, but the people, you know, the new friends and family that you do make, because I'm a firm believer that family are not necessarily blood. You know, they're people you choose to be your family. But the friends and family that you do make along the way will more than make up for it, definitely.
How can I ask how you feel you were regarded at school, which is a very formative experience for all of us, surrounded by a largely unsupervised group of uncivilized people who haven't really learned
very much. So
go on then.
Well, I went to an all-boys school, funnily enough. If we're going to talk about you know, I suppose the most formative years, secondary school, I was kind of I don't particularly think anyone thought of me as particularly effeminate or anything, but, you know, I was always sort of like the sensitive soul, you know, the one that, you know, people, you know, if they had problems would always go to and stuff like that. You know, I was never particularly blokish.
Can I ask you another question?
For obvious reasons.
Do you remember the first person you confided what you're telling now the world? Can you remember the first person that you confided any of this to?
Yeah, it was the friend I just mentioned, the one who said I had big balls. And it was literally, you know, it was the end of April back in 2012, and I told her. We were up in Whitby at the Whitby Goth Festival. I'm not a goth, but you know, she is, and I went up to keep her company. And I think this goes back to what Kath was saying earlier about why I chose to come out when I did. Because I don't know if anyone's ever been to, you know, sort of like the Whitby Goth Festival, but you're surrounded by people of all sexualities, all genders and everything. And it was just an amazingly liberating feeling.
Yeah, it's basically Brighton, isn't it, for a weekend?
Basically, yeah, sort of like Brighton with lots of eyeliner.
Yeah.
But, so I was just encouraged, and, you know, that weekend, although I only had male clothes, not weekend, it was actually a whole week, you know, going out for the evening, although I only had male clothes, I nipped down to Boots, got a bit of Barry M makeup and experimented with a bit of eyeliner and stuff like that. And my friend who I was there with, Claire, her boyfriend at the time was a cross-dresser anyway. And so, you know, she just didn't think anything of it until breakfast the last day. And I just said to her, I said, look, I'm transgender, you know. I should be in a woman's body. And what do you make of that then? And her chin hit the breakfast table. But yeah, she's been a good mate. So,
and was it a huge relief to say those words, or did you think, oh God, I can't put that back now?
No, absolutely huge relief. Absolutely huge relief. And the very following day, which was the 1st of May 2012, I actually went public on Facebook.
The following day.
Yeah, because I thought I've started the ball rolling now, and I can't take anything back. So I just announced to the world at large, you know, well, here I am.
And you quite rightly said that we're all on a bit of a journey. So what have you got left? What are you aiming at next? And where and how do you hope to feel? And where do you hope to be in, say, 5 or 10 years' time or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 5-10 years time, hopefully settle down. I think, frankly, I don't think I'm exactly a career person now. I'm 53 now, but at least, you know, a meaningful job under my belt, and you know, a degree of income that allows me to, you know, be a bit flexible with my time and to maybe do some advocacy work or something like that, you know?
Yep. You've got some insight there that other people really could find really valuable.
Yeah.
Steph, it was a pretty good show until you showed up. Now it's a fantastic show.
Now it's really rotten, isn't it? Yeah.
No. No, I was doing that thing of suggesting, you know, that doesn't matter. Steph, thank you for your tweet and then especially for your call.
Oh, no, thank you very much for listening. Sorry if I've bored you. Thanks,
no,
guys.
Gosh, no, you haven't bored us at all. I think you're quite an inspiration.
Talk to you again, Steffi. Thank you. Couple of quick tweets.
Teats?
Couple of quick teats. Now, there's
that was
Freud.
Freudian.
At work. Now, what was it? Somebody sent a very dubious tweet to you about that sort of thing, and I decided not to read it out then, but at 20 to 1, I'm not sure if I might be able to. It's definitely near the knuckle. But I will read this out from Sally Mook. Well said, Kath. Stephanie is fantastic. Great call. And Tabrajali Adam has tweeted, this was a great listen. Happy that Ian doesn't hold any grudges against anyone and all of that. And this is an ironic one, I hope. Somebody signing themselves Misery FM.
Yeah.
That would be a great name for a radio station. I would listen to a radio station that was broadcasting nothing but misery.
Would it be, what, the Smiths, Wall to Wall?
Well, I just think, you know, it would... No, not just the music, really, but just, you know, painting, mind you, state of the world.
I think Misery FM might already exist.
Maybe
over Leicester Square.
I think it's an entire radio group. Tommy says, Tommy Boyd, you're super intelligent. Nah, just plain super. You're tuned to Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
This evening on the show, we've spent some time with Ian Lee, which was fantastic. Took a whole queue of calls from people wanting to talk to him, some of whom had not listened to Talk Radio before, but are going to in the future, which is great. We talked about some serious things, including the Iraq war, the situation in Korea, the whole business of nuclear arms. And we were discussing lighter things after the midnight news. And Stephanie tweeted, just to let on her incredible story. Kath, well done, Kath, said phone us, and so she did.
Yeah.
And we had a fascinating conversation with somebody who was once a sort of not particularly alpha male, but is now a beta female, as she put it.
And much happier by the sounds of things.
And you were saying during the commercials, Kath, how amazing that to have a son and then to take the plunge that Steph has taken. And it reminded me, I don't know if I've told you this story before, it's a big one for me, so I might have done. So pretend I haven't, all right, if I have. The first person I ever worked with in broadcasting at the BBC, a really lovely man, great man, called Christopher Warbis, phoned me up some 20 years later out of the blue, because I'd got to know his family, and said, I'm not Christopher Warbis anymore, I'm Christine Warbis now, and part of my journey is to go and meet people that who used to know me as Christopher, and will now welcome me as Christine. So we said, fantastic, come and see us. But the thing was, he brought his son and daughter, who we used to look after from time to time and knew very well. And my sons were there sitting around the kitchen table when Christine came in with Christine's son and daughter. And I concentrated very hard and made sure that I referred to her as she. And, you know, then something happened which will stay with me forever, which was that Chris's son, a fantastic guy, said, as they had decided that they would, said, Christine had gone to the loo or something, and I said, so who wants a cup of tea? Who wants sugar or something? And the son said, in front of my two sons, Dad doesn't take sugar in his tea anymore.
Right.
And I hadn't prepared my boys, who were about, I think, 7 and 5, something like that.
Yeah.
For all of this. I just thought, no, a woman is coming round with her children. But it had obviously been agreed that they would continue to call Christine Dad, because mm-hmm. that's what Christine was. She was their dad.
Yeah.
Okay. And I tell this story because I still haven't explained that to my sons.
Did they say anything?
Nope.
No.
But I could tell that it was a kind of a, what, moment.
Oh, really?
And being a typical parent, with so much else going on, I put it down to being a moment and left it at that. But we're all together at Christmas, hopefully, because you know how things are. I'm going to say, did you guys ever get shaken by the fact that one of my female friends came round and her children called her dad? Hopefully they won't remember.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And you were nearly the face that launched 1,000 candles.
Candles. I don't even know what the leap was between those two thoughts.
Tell me the story.
Oh, we were watching TV, weren't we? And there's this time of night, of course, you all know that some of the TV channels flick to kind of gambling, don't they? So you've got kind of roulette, and I don't know what this game is particularly they're playing on this channel that we're watching. But I was saying, you know, a number of my friends... I've got a friend who works on one of these gaming channels, gambling channels, and I have another friend who works on QVC. And at one point, when I was working for the BBC, and I've been working there for some time and not really moving very much, she said, you know what, if you're fed up of this, I've been talking to my boss at QVC and he'd quite like to see you. I said, oh, what, is it just a general kind of vendor? I don't know what they call them. And she said, well, no, you'd be the face of this candle company, but you would be the brand of this candle. And it seemed like such a weird thing at that point, me knowing nothing at all about candles, and but supposedly this would be my company. But actually now, when you look around, there are loads of people doing stuff like this. You know, you look on, for example, on YouTube, I followed a number of accounts for about a year or so of people who were kind of makeup specialists or lifestyle, and they have their own lines of things. And actually, when you look at who's behind them, they're not cottage industries. They're not just girls sitting in their bedrooms who seem to have a passion for makeup or a flair for putting it on. Mm. You want to write to them, look at the address. Mm. It's a marketing company.
Right.
So what's happening now is that big companies, whereas before, you know, I mentioned to you during the news, Jo Malone started off as a cottage industry. So I know she's a friend of mine. And,
really?
Yeah. And she did amazingly well. And she sold her company now. I think it's Estee Lauder own Jo Malone, I think. And so now, you know, it's a big company, but still using that brand, that very kind of personal, because it was always her baby. And now it seems that a lot of the big companies are doing it the other way around. So it's a big company, but they'll have a face of it. Mm-hmm. So it would appear that that's...
like the Trivago girl.
Yeah. Who, by the way, the Trivago girl. Yeah.
What? Go on.
Who is dressing her? I've never seen someone wear a grey cardigan to do an advert before. She seems to be kind of dipped in super glue and rolled through Matalan. I don't really know what her choices are. Apparently she's choosing her own clothes, I read.
So many distracting images there for an alpha male.
She's a really attractive woman, but she wear the clothing choices. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a massive fashionista, but I kind of know what goes together.
It works. I nearly shifted all our finances to Scottish widows.
Well, she's only wearing a cloak.
The cloaked woman. I just did. It was so obvious.
Have you ever met a Scottish widow? I've met a couple. They don't ever look like that.
They don't.
The French lieutenant's woman.
Whilst we're on branding and the potent effect of the right female front, can I just get you to say to Stephen Hewitt, in your best Kath voice, something like, night, night, Steve.
Oh, why?
Because he says, as usual, Kath's voice has sent me into other worlds. So I want to actually send
into
him...
into a stupor.
Out beyond the edge of the cosmos. So go ahead, go on.
What's his name?
Steve.
Night, night, Steve.
That'll do it. That's all it takes. See, I always wanted a digital clock by my bed that instead of going... or begin in the middle of the news, you know. So there you are, you're in your slumber and your digital radio comes on at 6:30 in the morning. It's the middle of the news and somebody says, you know, And 47 people died. Mm. And it's just, you know, not the way to come into the world. What I wanted was for somebody to say something like, good morning, darling.
Good morning, darling.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Or, Tommy.
Yeah,
go Tommy, on. Wake up now.
Oh, you're going to keep going. No, something along the lines of, you can go back to sleep for another 5 minutes.
Go on, five more minutes.
That's, you see, that would work. That should be done. That should be available. There should be an app you can get. You put your phone by the bed, and then you set your alarm, and first thing in the morning, your name, and up comes...
Good morning, darling.
See, that would work.
My husband wouldn't like that.
No,
he's too used to it.
Lots of people could do it. When I used to go down to the West Country to play this fantastic game of village cricket that was really all about beer and socialising...
Aren't they all?
Yeah. Wonderful game, cricket. It's got nothing to do with sport.
And everything to do with tea.
And there was this guy there, and he was a big, rotund, beardy fellow. And we knew that he lived in an enormous cottage somewhere just at the other end of the village, off the village. And he had a boat.
Oh, nice.
And he'd go sailing, and he was fine. And him and his partner, they were fine. And what happened was about the mid-60s, just when things like Bieber were getting going... and big perfumery companies were becoming huge, his partner experimented with getting lots of flowers and getting the essence of them and bottling them and making perfumes and nice smells and smelly things. And eventually one of the big firms came and they bought them out and they gave them a cheque, which meant that they never had to do anything else again except go to the pub every evening or sail the boat to the Mediterranean and back again. How about that? What they did with all the preparations that the couple had devised in their kitchen was to junk them. They just bought up a potential competitor and killed the company.
Gosh, they weren't interested in what they built.
No, they just wanted to make sure that somebody wasn't going to come along and in 10 years' time be Anita Roddick.
Aye.
And they missed her, you see. Or maybe she was that clever and she said... I'm not for sale at any price. Because apparently, to get her second shop, she had to give something like 7% of her equity to the only person who would give her the money, lend her the money. And he was a bloke who owned a little petrol station at the end of her road in Worthing or something like that.
So?
Yeah. And then when she really made it big, she had to go... Her accountant said to her, look, you've got to buy this guy out. Buy him back. Because, you know, you just want the whole thing to yourself. So they went... to her and to this guy, and they said, buying you back, here's the check for 7% of what we're now worth. It's 90 million.
Gosh!
So I heard.
I know the person who put her in a rocket when she died.
Oh.
She went in. She went up in a firework.
Who's that then? How do you know a person who puts somebody in a rocket and blasts their ashes?
Because he works for Fantastic Fireworks in Bedfordshire.
Really?
Yeah, and they do these amazing displays and they will do you a funeral firework.
We run out of time. We could go on and on and on. And indeed, we have done for 3 hours, and we look forward to doing the same thing again tomorrow night. This is Tommy Boyd in for Ian Lee. I'll do our details very quickly, although you'll need to hold them over until 10 o'clock tomorrow, unless you want to bother some of our other folks, such as Paul, starting at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's 03444991000. That is the telephone number to the switchboard of us. At Talk Radio. Night night.